Head On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. Outed CIA agent is confirmed to have been working on Iran-related issues. Intelligence sources say Valerie Wilson was part of an operation 3 years ago tracking the proliferation of nuclear weapons material into Iran. And the sources allege that when Mrs. Wilson's cover was blown, the administration's ability to track Iran's nuclear ambitions was damaged as well. Today marks one of George Bush's defining moments as America's leader. It was today, 3 years ago, that he uttered his victory over Iraq speech. Quote, "Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed," unquote. He triumphantly told 5,000 sailors aboard the USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier on May 1, 2003. 93% of American casualties in Iraq have been since he gave that speech, leading many to question whether or not he has any sense of what to do to make that country safe once again. Not content with one failed war, Bush is actively trying to create another. This time, though, allies are harder to find. Turkey won't let the U.S. attack Iran from its land. The Turkish Foreign Minister Abdullah Gül said Sunday that his country refused a request from the United States to attack Iran from its Air Force base in Incirlik, despite the U.S. offer of a nuclear reactor, according to a report in Al-Binyan. In an interview for the United Arab Emirates newspaper, Gül noted that America's efforts to attack Iran are imaginary and that Turkey's stance is strategic and refuses the use of its land for any belligerent activity against neighboring countries. Vermonters are tired of the Boy King. An effort that began in March culminated Monday when three Vermont communities delivered a message to House Speaker Dennis Hastert, "Start the process to impeach President George Bush." Six Vermont towns passed resolutions on a town meeting day called for Bush's impeachment. On Monday, Ellen Tenney, a bookstore owner from Rockingham, Vermont, hand-delivered petitions to Hastert, an Illinois Republican. Hastert was not present, and aides were said to be bland and not very friendly. Today's immigrant rallies affect businesses. Immigrant-owned taco stands and bakeries from California to New Jersey largely were shut down on Monday, but most U.S. restaurants reported no shortage of busboys and cooks despite a national boycott and major protests by pro-immigration activists. In Los Angeles's predominantly Latino neighborhood of Echo Park, mom-and-pop bakeries joined other businesses in closing for the day. The same was true in a largely Hispanic area of Jersey City, New Jersey, where a normally busy Mexican restaurant was closed at lunchtime. This is News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
I can take care of myself. I can make a peanut butter sandwich. I can brush my teeth and I can give myself a bath. I can walk home alone from school. I can pick dinner from the trash behind the deli. I can watch the baby for the whole weekend. I can keep a baseball bat by my bed just in case there's trouble. Don't worry about me. I can take care of myself.
If you're in jail, who'll be there to take care of your family? Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Immigrant reform rallies are taking place around the country. In cities and towns around the country, rallies were held today with the theme being, quote, "A Day Without Immigrants," unquote. 400,000 rallied in Chicago, 100,000 in Los Angeles, tens of thousands in New York, and hundreds of thousands more in smaller cities around the nation. The rallying call was "Si se puede," or "Yes, we can." This is the sentiment of a population of undocumented immigrants who want to become citizens and have all the rights and responsibilities of being U.S. citizens. The normally bustling downtown Los Angeles produce and garment districts were virtually shut down this morning, and truck traffic at the ports was down sharply after many employees protesting the nation's immigrant policies did not show up for work. The dearth of activity in the produce and garment districts, both heavily dependent on immigrant labor, was so far the most dramatic sign of the impact of today's organized immigrant protests on local commerce. Only sporadic business closures and staffing shortages reported across the remainder of Southern California. South of the border today, Bolivia's President Evo Morales decreed the nationalization of that country's natural gas industry today, following through on an election pledge to increase control over the energy industry. Under that decision, he ordered foreign firms to send production to a state company for sales and industrialization, and said that the state will also recover Bolivian hydrocarbon companies that were privatized in the 1990s, with the state taking over shares that are in the hands of foreign companies and of semi-public Bolivian entities, according to an AP report based on Mr. Morales' speech, which was delivered at the country's San Alberto gas and oil field. Morales also ordered the military to occupy the natural gas fields. Protesters seeking a shutdown of the Guantanamo Bay U.S. prison camp marched to the U.S. mission to the United Nations on Monday and held an interfaith service in its entryway after building owners asked New York police not to arrest them. Nearly half of the 135 demonstrators, many of them members of the clergy, had hoped to be arrested as an act of civil disobedience to protest what they say is torture at the U.S. camp. When police announced that they would not be jailed, protest leaders boasted of a symbolic victory, saying the police told them that U.S. diplomats had heard their message. Several of the protesters dressed in orange jumpsuits and wore black hoods over their heads as they knelt in front of the privately owned building in prayer after their march from U.N. headquarters a half mile away. For Head On Radio Network News, I'm Bruce Birch.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. Monday is finally here. I'm Bob Kincaid. A week awaits us, and I'm excited about it. Of course, today the big news, the protest across the country in support of the rights of people whose ancestors have been here for 28,000 years to be here. So that appears to have been leading the news in most of the so-called mainstream media reports. But there are other things. Lord God, Billy Bob, there are other things. And the chief among those you may have heard mentioned by Bruce Birch in our top of the hour news. This is one of those, this is one of those things that makes you sit up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night. And the story was reported by Ynet News. You can see all this over at aliberaldose.blogspot.com. Ynet News reports Turkey won't let U.S. attack from its Iran from its land. Turkish Foreign Minister Abdullah Gül said Sunday that his country refused a request from the United States to attack Iran from its Air Force base in Incirlik, even though the U.S. promised a nuclear reactor. Now, I'm sure, those few weird, bizarre little Bush supporters that still exist out there, I saw my fifth or my sixth W sticker today driving around. And, those are the bizarre ones now. No, it's not, but this report just isn't only being put out in Ynet. The Jerusalem Post has it as well. Turkey does not allow, Turkey does not intend to allow the United States to launch an attack against Iran from the Incirlik military base, Turkish news agencies reported Sunday. Gül said that facilitating an attack against a neighboring country was not an option despite the U.S. offer to build Turkey a nuclear reactor as a counterbalance to Iran's expanding nuclear facilities. Thousands of people rallied in Sinop to protest the planned nuclear facility. Calls for Turkey to develop alternative energy sources were widespread during the past winter. Now, are we a little nervous? These evil bastards want their war. It's what they're, you know, it's what they're looking for. It's what they're looking for to divert our attention from $3.10 a gallon gasoline, or $3.25, or $3.75, or $4 a gallon gasoline. And it is enough to make you run howling into the night. And of course, over the weekend, if you were paying attention, and I'm sure you were, you caught Stephen Colbert at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, who said, among other things, that the references should end to the Bush administration rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. He said the Bush administration is actually soaring. At best, the analogy should be that of rearranging deck chairs on the Hindenburg. And from time to time, they would pan over to Dear Leader, and you could see the look on his face. And it would, and he was squirming and fidgeting like a 3-year-old, and lo and behold, making faces that sort of, I don't know, they would the looks he was giving would have curdled milk. And if Stephen Colbert, if looks could kill, Stephen Colbert would have gone away in a basket. So there's all of that. There's an abundance of fun to be had this evening. An abundance of horror to be discussed. And whatever you've got on your mind as well. I mean, you know how this works. I'm not an egomaniac, OxyContin-popping fool. I don't believe that, I believe that what you have to say is every bit as vital and trenchant and critical to the success of our dialogue as anything I might. So, you know, jump in. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Of course, we're broadcasting live tonight from the Shoals area of Alabama. Sunny and beautiful today. My father and I went out doctor visiting, and such fun that is. And I want to talk a little bit about that later on as well, because there were some truly disgusting little moments in that whole transaction that I think is worthy of our consideration. So all of that is ahead. Let's take our first break of the evening. And when we come back, your phone calls. Agnes, crank me up a little bit of bumper music, please. Again, the email address, you know that. Bob@headonradio.com. We will be right back.
After 7 days, he was quite tired, so God said, let there be a day just for picnics with wine and bread. Gathered up some people he had made, created blankets and laid back in the shade. The people sipped their wine.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper. Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing, it's not an option, it's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Planet Check.
He's the granola Ayatollah of canola. Charles Ford, founder of Grassoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now, Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian, too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told me that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fat, some flour, flax, hemp seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel, not only their feed. Small towns could be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more EcoWrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grassoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
Everybody dance. Even Pink Little Me. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. You're a nightly confrontation with the facts, and I am just tickled to death to be here. And, knock solid wood. Things seem to be going well. So let's try the next big adventure. Let's take a phone call. David is joining us from Maine. David, good to talk to you finally. It's been a while. I've tried.
Yes, it has been a while. Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
I'm fine. I'm getting a little feedback on this, but that's okay, I guess.
Okay.
I think that's... Wait, yeah, I'm still getting it, but I guess I can work with it or whatever. Let's see. The hero of the week has to be Steve Colbert.
Yes.
Definitely. I think what he said to Bush needed to be said, and I think it's funny that with both. Whoa. Yeah, I got some back on
you're,
that.
You're okay.
All right. Cool. And.
Oh dear, here we go.
Maybe it's because I'm speaking too loud. All right, I'll be quiet.
Are you on a speakerphone or something?
No.
Okay. Because I was hearing a little bit of an echoey thing. Have a run at it. I'm sure Agnes is turning knobs like crazy, so I'm sure she'll get normalized here in a second.
Yeah. Well, Well, it's not that bad now, is it?
Right, Agnes? Go ahead, David.
I will just speak away from the phone a little bit more.
Hopefully. Why are you there, David?
Okay, so...
Okay, I guess we've lost David.
No, you haven't.
Oh, okay, there you are. Great.
It's just the feedback is...
Okay.
Let me see. Well, I don't think it's that bad now.
Okay. Yeah, she says she's fixing things now. So give it have a run at it.
All right. So the immigrant march today, obviously. It's like I'm Jimi Hendrix.
I know it makes you crazy, doesn't it?
It's like I'm Jimi Hendrix.
Don't set the guitar on fire, David.
Okay, I won't set the guitar on fire. Even with both hands. Good. I wonder why it's doing that.
I don't know. We've been toying and tinkering all weekend long, and it'll straighten out.
Could it be because of the volume of what I'm speaking, or?
No, I don't think it's. It's there on the board, in the lovely studios in the undisclosed location. And okay. I'm trying to get there. I tell you what. David, if you don't mind, we'll have Agnes put you back on hold until we can sort out some of this stuff. Hopefully, we'll have it done by the bottom of the hour.
That's no problem, Bob.
God willing.
I will hold on.
I appreciate it.
All right.
Did you catch Stephen Colbert? It was funny because the entire audience was extremely uncomfortable with the whole thing. I watched it live. And I couldn't help noticing that the laughter was of that nervous variety. Oh God, what's he doing? He just called George Bush a Nazi. He said Hindenburg. That was a Nazi airship. Stephen Colbert just called George Bush a Nazi. And of course, and what made it so marvelously effective was the fact that it was delivered from the standpoint, you know, that deadpan imitation, the O'Reilly thing that Colbert does. He said, you know, I'm a fan. I'm telling you this because I'm a fan. And went into just made a complete mockery of Bush's whole thing, you know, where he talks about, you know, I feel it in my gut. And, well, I tell you what, the best way of comprehending how George Bush felt about the grilling that he got at the hands of Stephen Colbert is at our good friend's website, WD40.com, D-U-B-Y-A, the letter D, 40, WD40.com. Go over there, scroll down a little bit, and there is a picture of George Bush that... And you know, for those of you with a historical bent, have a look at the look on his face and tell me who else looked like that. And, in the last century or so, it'll be okay. Go and have a look. And then, by the way, happy birthday to WD40.com. 2 years old today. And what's more, I guess it's something we share now, because WD40.com turned 2 today, and Agnes and I passed our 13th wedding anniversary today. So it's been a nice day all the way around. We get the phones all perfected out, and it'll be a perfect night as well. Let's see, do I have WD40.com up on this? Have a look. Yeah, there it is. It's if you scroll, there it is. That face. Look at that face. Okay, I'll give it away. The picture I'm thinking of is in black and white. It's kind of grainy. The person has his arms crossed across his chest and is making exactly that face. You with me yet? Mussolini. Mussolini. That is a Mussolini face, if ever there was one. I don't know, maybe the lights are coming on. A weirdo like Trent Lott comes out on one of the Sunday shows and says, it might not be such a bad idea to tax the oil companies. These congressional Republicans are running as hard as they possibly can to get away from Dear Leader. Because they know there won't be any coattails in November. There just won't. I'm sorry, this business with the telephones has got me it's inside my head. But we will have it fixed. Another story that's banging around. Well, you know what, I've been meaning to talk, but of course things have been so bizarre for the last week, what with Comcast cable not letting things like voiceover internet protocol telephony work, things like that. That we didn't have a chance to. The story that broke, Thursday evening? The story that broke Thursday evening, Thursday morning, really, and about the letter sent by Randall McCloy to the other victims of the Sago mine, saying that they had to share their self-rescue bottles. Did you catch that? Was that just break your heart? But the one thing that was more disturbing than anything else about that were the interviews with some of the family members that I caught. One of them that said, we can't stop. We can't stop mechanical malfunctions. I'm just mad at the government for not getting in there and rescuing them fast enough. The government wouldn't have had to go in and try to rescue them. But you know this. Wouldn't have had to try to rescue them had International Coal Group given a damn about their workers' safety. Wouldn't have had to go in and rescue them if it had been a union mine, because it probably wouldn't have happened. But we've said that before. But the proof for... The proof that things don't have to be that way, out of Australia, from the Sydney Morning Herald. The rescue of the two trapped Tasmanian miners could take another 48 hours, Australian Workers Union National Secretary Bill Shorten said today. They said it could take 24 to 48 hours to bring the miners from their underground cage, where they've been trapped since a rock fall at the Beaconsfield gold mine last Tuesday night. They have had the opportunity to stay alive because adequate precautions were taken for this kind of thing, because they do occur in the mining business. It's that simple. But the International Coal Group, the self-rescuers that provide 1 hour of air, didn't even work. Canada, phosphate mine or something like that, was that where they went into a room and were found a week later playing cards? Because, again, there's a responsive government up there that insists that these working people be treated not like draft animals, but like human beings. And we find out from poor Randall McCloy that they were passing around self-rescuers, trying to stay alive, taking turns, banging on the walls of the mine with a sledgehammer they found, and wondering why the International Coal Group didn't care enough to keep their equipment up to snuff. Yeah, that ought to make you just a little bit sick at your stomach. But again, you know, they bring these people on for interviews on TV. I'm just mad at the government. And at that point, you know, there's no hope for that kind of people. There really isn't. Okay, let's take a quick break, try to fix some of this. And as soon as we do, your phone calls are welcome at 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Roll that bumper music, Agnes. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
They're coming down for us from heaven. And I see you riding a big red horse. And you're driving the horses, whipping them. And they're spitting and frothing all on them out. And they're coming right at us. And I see the future. There's no death. Because you and I were angels.
I love you, man.
I know you do, baby. I've loved you since the day we met. Anyone's ever heard of
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible. A cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
Lots of experts talk about the ways that schools should inspire students to be creative. How you doing? I'm John Prine. They say that helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math or their English skills. And of course, all parents love to experience the joy of seeing and hearing something their child has created. Well, one of the best places creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. There you'll find kids working out a phrase in a choir part, learning technical stuff such as fingerings on an instrument, or even composing and arranging music on computers. Music classrooms are bursting with creative energy just waiting to be explored by young minds. So don't let it go to waste. Support your school music program. Thank you.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
Can you imagine a world without children? A world without their smiles or their laughter? A world where children don't play or sing or dream or imagine?
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we can't imagine a world without children. That's why we're working every day to find cures for diseases that strike down children everywhere. Diseases like cancer, pediatric AIDS, and sickle cell. And we won't stop until every child is cured and every disease is defeated. Because we can't imagine a world without children. Can you?
Finding cures, saving children. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. To learn how you can help, call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to our website, stjude.org.
Kincaid, I think during the break we got everything fixed. Let's waste no time then and go straight back to David, who's been patient enough to wait until we figured out what we were doing. Are you there, David? David? David?
I'm Suzanne.
I hear you, Agnes. Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Bob?
Oh, Susan.
Suzanne, yes.
It's yeah, Suzanne, Bob. Okay, thank you.
I'm Mom.
You're right, I know.
Oh, okay, yeah.
How are you this evening?
Afternoon, I'm fine, thank you. Lots of sunshine here.
No, that's not, yeah, I forgot. Yeah, we're in that time zone thing.
Yes, we are in a big time zone thing. I wanted to talk to you about going to doctors. You had,
yes.
You were going to discuss that. I went to doctors for years and years with my kids first, and then when my husband was ill. But I always went with someone, and I preferred to have someone go with me, simply because you need someone who can be your representative if you miss something. So that if you don't ask the right question, they may think of the right question to ask. And it's really important for people, especially as they get older, to have someone go with them, someone who cares. You know?
Oh, absolutely. And because we have so many questions we want to ask, and, you know, the doctor, you know, he's in the door, he's out the door, he's gone, and you're like, I wanted it.
Right, right.
And you're done for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, what you have to do is write everything down.
Right.
That's
exactly.
Seriously. I had to do that because I found out, you know, it depends on the doctor. But with most of them, especially I have an HMO, I have Kaiser, whoop-de-doo. And it's, you know, those guys, they're supposed to be in and out in 15 minutes because they're on a timer, right?
Yeah, and, well, I mean, they're on a short leash.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So if you don't ask them the questions, then you forget. And I, you know, I had that problem for my husband with his doctor, too. You know, and mine is really difficult. So I just do that. And, but then does the doctor you're dealing with have email?
No, not that he has given to us.
Oh, okay. Because that's something that I found very helpful. In fact, for a while, I didn't even go see mine because I did everything by email, and he would just send me forms to go in and get my blood tests and stuff like that, and I didn't have to bother to see him. But then the Kaiser said, oh, you have to go in and see him, so so I did.
Let the insurance company declare it, thou dost.
Yes. And but it's really best if you have someone. I would say usually it's best if you have a mom go, because moms tend to be able to separate themselves a little bit from what's going on emotionally.
Right.
And look at it and jump on the doctor, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, this guy was rather off-putting because we're trying to deal with some rather significant problems. And there's a lot of pain involved.
Yes, sir.
And I just looked at him today and I said, you know, in order for us to be able to try to strengthen Dad the way he needs to be and stuff, we're going to have to deal with some of the pain. And I said, I know you guys don't like to prescribe this stuff, but, you know, we need some heavy-duty pain meds.
Yes.
And he said, well, you'll just have to get another doctor because I won't prescribe that.
Oh, see, here they don't have a choice in California. If you hurt, they have to prescribe pain meds or they are no longer in business. Seriously, there was a court case went through, and they have got to prescribe pain medications if you hurt. And it hasn't, you know, they were pretending for a lot of years, like, oh, you just are hooked on these drugs. Hey, you know what? I'm sorry. No one's hooked on drugs. You know, this person has pain. My husband had a lot of pain.
Right.
And that was you know, because he had diabetes, and he ended up losing his legs above the knee eventually. As they took off parts, you know, just hacked and hacked at him for 3 years, a piece at a time. And finally he ended up with none, but it still didn't stop the whole situation. And so eventually he died from the whole thing. But it's diabetes. You know, diabetes is a
problem. Well, see, that's part of what we're dealing with my father.
Right. And so he got pain meds. You may have to go to another doctor. You really
well, he finally came around with something a little bit better than the Darvocet he had been giving.
What did he give him?
Hydrocodone.
Okay. Well, that's all right.
Yeah, basically Lortab.
That's Vicodin.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Is it Vicodin?
I'm not sure. I thought it was Lortab, but I could. It was hydrocodone APAP.
Okay. Yeah. Did it have a number?
I think so, but offhand I can't recall.
Well,
but what you know, what it boils down to is my dad.
Wrong.
My you know, we want to get better.
Yeah. Well.
And he's not willing to give up, and he's willing to fight, but he's got to have a little cooperation from his doc. Because, he, you know, you can't go out there and start walking around and trying to get better and stuff if it's agony for every step.
That's right. That's very true. Yeah. But codeine with number 3 is what I take for my arthritis, but my husband took number 4 for the pain in his legs. And the doctor had no problem, you know, taking care of that. But and that's actually a good thing to have. Just you know.
Well,
whatever.
Suzanne, the thing that I keep I caught myself being guilty of today, I make this I make these assumptions. On the one hand, I'm disgusted by the fact that everyone who's sick can't just go to the doctor. My father has appropriate medical care and medical coverage. But the medical care, not so much, you know. I mean,
yeah.
there's more than just the insurance fraud that's being perpetrated on the American people by this so-called private medical care system. There's more than just that. We have to address the quality of care as well.
And it sucks. Just to put it bluntly, it sucks. And
it does.
They don't know what to do. I think it's part of the problem. They do not have specialists in geriatric medicine, and I think they need to have that because the problems of older people are not the problems of younger people, just like the
no.
here are not the problems in Africa or in South America. And
not by any stretch of the imagination.
Right, but they aren't looking at that. And so you're probably dealing with someone who maybe doesn't like dealing with older people. I don't know. Or does he have just old people going in to see him? What was the word?
That's about all the people I ever see in there is older folks.
Yeah, and he probably resents it, the doctor. Some doctors do. Some doctors are really, you know, remember, they went through this training where they were turned into automatons.
That's true. And you know, they don't see people.
No,
they see problems.
Uh-huh.
Clusters of symptoms and diagnoses.
Right. Right.
The way lawyers are often criticized, and rightly so, for not seeing a person, but rather seeing nothing but a mass of rights and duties. And we are far more than that. We're more than the sum of our parts.
Yeah. Well, I found here, and I know they have them around the country now, and that is nurse practitioners, generally speaking, are better diagnosticians than most doctors. And they are better at treating people than doctors, but they have to have the doctors fine. Now, they have physician assistants, too, and some of them are very good. But that's a new thing. That's only in the last 5 years that they've had them, whereas they've had nurse practitioners for a long time. And mostly they're nurses who have decided they need to move up or on or feel like they can do more for people as a nurse practitioner than as an RN who has, you know, who doesn't diagnose, who just does what the doctor says. So if they have those available, if they have a nurse practitioner available who has experience with older people, you might see if you can switch and then just, you know, just have the medications approved by the doctor, because that's really all the doctor ever does.
Well, so many of these, and it's always disturbing to me to go into this particular office, Suzanne, because it seems like our visits are always on a Monday.
Uh-huh.
And invariably we walk in there and, you know, our appointments are usually 1:15, something like that. We walk in and there is a full spread that has been provided. And, you know, God knows I don't begrudge anybody a nice lunch, but a full spread. The pharmaceutical rep brings lunch every day.
Oh, geez, that's bad. That is really, really bad. That's terrible.
And so I'm thinking, you know, this doc's being bought off by Big Pharma.
Right, right.
That's, and it's very frustrating because he's changed a bunch of medications, and, you know, Dad's got a copay. And he sends it off to the pharmacy that sends him 90 days worth, and they charge him X amount of money.
Yeah.
And then the next trip we go back after all, having sent the order off, we go back the next trip, he changes the medicines.
And you've already paid for 90 days worth.
Right.
Yes.
And you can't send it back.
No, you can't. Once you've gotten it, you cannot send it back. They won't allow that.
You know? No.
And even if you have never opened it, if you have accepted the bottle, you can't give it back.
Exactly.
They don't allow it. Yeah, I know. I've run into that problem. And I just, I make them read things to me before I accept them.
we got to learn to be smart patients, because just having the coverage is not enough.
No, and this new stuff, this new horrible Medicare drug bill is so bad. I mean, I can't believe I can get pain medication for $10, but my cholesterol medicine costs $50 for the same amount.
it's crazy.
Not to hurt, but it's more important to have my cholesterol be under control.
Well, that's true. And, you know, I was talking with our buddy John Fox down in Australia. Aspirin with codeine in it is an over-the-counter medication down there.
Yeah.
Just blows my mind.
Well, it is in Mexico too. In fact, everything just got legitimized in Mexico.
The DEA is having absolute hissies over the Mexican decision to decriminalize small possession of cocaine, heroin, just about anything.
Everything.
But it kind of makes sense to me.
Well, it does to me too. For these people, you know.
The fact of the matter is, if you're putting people with small-time possession in prison, you're never going to catch the big bad people.
No.
It's not going to happen.
And they're putting too many people in prison. And here in California, we've got a lot of people in prison that do not.
Yeah, for stuff that they, you know, these people don't need to be imprisoned. They need to be helped. I mean, that's why I kind of felt like a little bit of a hypocrite talking about Flush Flumball the other night, because on the one hand, if the guy has a legitimate drug problem, he needs help with that drug problem.
Yeah. Well, we have that in California. We have a thing where if you're arrested and are sent to prison for that, you may not go to prison. You may just go into rehab. And you get, I don't know, one or two tries at that in California before you're locked up, really locked up. But
well, in both West Virginia and Alabama, the prison system is absolutely on the verge of collapse, Suzanne, because the people who are inhabiting it are people who were busted for DUI and small-time drug possessors and addicts. And unless you just want to, I can't imagine, you know, these politicians come home and during the campaign season they say, well, see, we was tough on crime.
Yeah.
You know, but they're destroying the penal system that needs to be there to handle the really bad people.
Yes, and there are.
And in the process, they're destroying the people with substance abuse and addictions. They're destroying them by sending them to criminal university.
Right. Well, that's a problem we have here, I think. I'm not sure exactly what the problem is with the juvenile system, but that's where they start. They start in the juvenile system, and then they never get out. You know, and there are some people who can't exist outside of prison anymore. They will do small crimes just so they can go back.
Because they get three squares a day and they get taken care of.
Right, and they can't function in society. They have no idea how to live.
But on the other hand, the guy who gets, I mean, I'm not sure what the law is down here in Alabama, and I have no intention of trying to find out. But in West Virginia, there's mandatory jail time involved with a first time DUI.
Oh, that's bad.
And that guy doesn't need jail time.
No.
That guy needs to be in a 12-step program people who have been through what he or she has been through, and maybe help it not happen again.
Yeah. And we're supposed to have that here. Whether or not we do, I don't know, because I haven't had to get involved. So much of what we do is so very wrong and very bad for people.
Well, the thing I keep coming back to, and I've said this for a long time, almost as long as this show has existed, Suzanne, is that we, for some reason or another, a vast majority of people in America have what I call a punishment fetish. We live with such a level of insecurity in our own self-worth that we can only raise ourselves up by pushing other people down. And as a consequence, we have a prison system that's straining at the seams, because we have to be able to look at them and go, see, they're failures. I'm good.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, for the first time in our entire American history, we have, we got a guy in the White House with a couple of DUIs and a suspected cocaine bust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the apex of what you get in a hypocrite nation. And, it galls me and it hurts me, Suzanne, to call my beloved country a hypocrite nation. But, if we don't call it that, we will never cure it.
Right.
Every 12-step program that I've ever heard of begins with admitting the problem.
Yes. And if you don't admit and define the problem, you don't know what to do to solve it.
Exactly.
And make it better.
And one of the problems we have in this country is we love to punish people. And the other problem that we have is that we are fundamentally hypocrites and cowards as a result of the leadership that is in place over us. Because it really does influence the national, the national character. I mean, if the right-wing yackers were correct, they're the ones that said because Bill Clinton had an affair that marriage was in jeopardy in the United States. Well, if that's the case, George Bush is a coward, and it betrays itself in the national character.
Mm-hmm. It does. It really does, and you can see it just in the people in his party who are doing bad things. They are horrible people, and they don't do anything simple. They do things that are just horrendous.
Yeah, it's not little bitty evil. It's the great big stuff with the horns and the cloven hooves and the tail, and you look at it and you know it's evil, and that's what makes it hard for me to have a conversation with a Bush voter, Suzanne, because I look at them and I want to say, you did evil. Do you repent of the evil that you did?
Yeah. I have.
And unless they do,
I can't talk to them.
No.
I really can't. They don't. And some of them tell me that they're good Baptists, and I say, good what? That's no Baptist I ever heard of,
Well, exactly.
Although they were that way. I can't say that's none I've ever heard of, because when I was young and I go with my cousins to the Baptist church, because I didn't go to Baptist church, when I would go with them to Baptist church, you weren't allowed to wear makeup, and you couldn't dance, and you couldn't smoke, and you couldn't do this, and you couldn't do that. But you know what? They all did it. They all did.
Well, sure.
But this is in the 50s, right? When what the Republicans like to say was the perfect time.
I guess that bespeaks a little bit of what it was like for me growing up here, because I graduated from high school down here in 1981, and I may have mentioned it before, we weren't allowed to have proms. We had to have junior-senior banquets because the high school principal was a religious freak and would not allow dancing.
Wow.
I'm not kidding.
That's bad. Oh, that is terrible. That is so stupid.
Yeah, agonizingly so. And that's what makes it hard to comprehend where some of these people are coming from. They talk about following Christ and doing, godly things, and then you turn around and vote for a guy who slaughtered 100,000 innocent people. I heard another statistic come out of Iraq today that there are 100,000 people who have been displaced from their homes as a result of what we've done to them.
Yeah.
That's not a result of Zarqawi or the insurgency. It's a result of what we have done.
That's right.
And another report that says 34,000 people have been imprisoned, and nobody knows where they are. They've been disappeared.
Yeah.
I mean, we're approaching the kind of numbers that Saddam Hussein was accused of.
Yes. Very, well, probably more. Probably more than he was ever accused of, you know?
Exactly.
Count the Iranians that he killed. You know, that's different.
Well, and, you know, this idea, well, thank God for Turkey standing up and saying, no, no, we don't want to be part of this.
Yeah.
It's just disturbing all the way around. Suzanne, so good to talk to you. I'm glad we got our phone problems fixed, and I hope we'll have another chat some evening.
Okay.
Afternoon for you.
Afternoon, that's right. Okay.
Okay. Bob. Take care.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And, well, doggone it. Yeah, let's go to Bo. Hey, Bo, you're head on.
Hello, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you? Good to talk to you.
I'm doing pretty good. I thought I would call in and let you know, I'm not sure if you're aware of the delegation that's going to the United Nations leaving tomorrow from the Appalachia.
Well, I didn't know that they were leaving tomorrow, but we had covered this story a couple of weeks ago on the program. So how many people is it that are headed to New York, to the United Nations?
There's 10 Coalfield residents traveling. I think we have 6 from West Virginia, 2 from Tennessee, 2 from Kentucky. And our intention is to go, and we're going to be speaking with the United Nations Commission on Sustainable Development.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to give firsthand testimony to the dangers of irresponsible coal mining practices, like mountaintop removal, valley fills, and coal sludge impoundments. And we want the world to know about America's dirty little secret and what's going on here and how that we are victims.
Well, you know, I try to mention it from time to time and just raise it in the consciousness. And I've had some fascinating chats online with some folks over in the headonradionetwork.com chat room who had never heard of this. You know, people who try to remain reasonably informed about their world. And you're right. It is a dirty little secret, and it is something that the coal barons would very much like to keep a secret.
Well, yeah, exactly. And not just coal barons, the government itself wants to keep a secret because, you know, we're the sacrificial lambs for the nation's so-called cheap energy, but there's no such thing. And
well, have you seen these ads that are running on TV now, Bo?
Well, they're pretty sickening. Yeah.
Cleancoal.org or something like that.
Coal can do that. And
They've got a no kid. They've got I saw one that's got like a little 10-year-old girl who's sitting in her bedroom doing homework.
That's really the saddest part of the whole thing, that they are indoctrinating our children.
Yes.
Believe that coal is the future, and it's not. We all know that. It's just like right now we're experiencing, and we are seeing right now the peak production of oil, and we're paying the price now at the gas pump. And it's not going to get any better. I really hope folks don't think it's going to, because it's not. Because we're
because I heard that crap on the news this evening, Bo, about it. Well, you know, the American people need to be steeled to the idea it may take 3 years for gas prices to come down.
They're not going to come down because we're not going to produce as much oil next year as we did this year, and the following year even less, and the following year even less than that. It's called peak production. We've hit it. And we're seeing it at the pump now. And the same thing is going to happen with coal, but you know, even if it didn't happen with coal, it's the wrong thing. And it's, we're using a technology that's, 1,000 years old? We've been burning coal? I mean, come on.
Yeah, basically.
You know, so.
And the thing is, like, you know, like this ad I saw, the little girl looks up and repeats that lie. You know,
exactly.
America has more coal than we can even use. We've got 250 years of coal in the ground.
What's amazing when they say that, you never hear them say, we have 250 years of coal in Appalachia or West Virginia or Kentucky or Tennessee. They just say we have 250 years of coal left. That coal is not a high grade of coal that they're referring to. It's a low grade of coal that requires a lot of chemical scrubbers to remove the impurities so they can call it clean coal. There's no such thing as clean coal, but they're duping the American people when they say that we have 250 years of coal left. That's not true.
That's at present usage rates, and you know, given the growth rate that we're experiencing, You know, that took that 250 years might be 25. Bo, would you do me a favor, please? I wanted to go ahead and get you on the air, but we've got to take our top of the hour break. Could you hold through the news, please?
Sure, no problem.
And we can continue this conversation?
Okay.
That'd be wonderful. Thank you, Bo.
Mm-hmm.
And, Agnes, if you'd just put Bo back on hold, please, and we'll come back after the news. This is Head On. Your phone calls are welcome. 877-443-2366, and we'll be right back after the news. I'm Bob.
Head On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. Added CIA agent is confirmed to have been working on Iran-related issues. Intelligence sources say Valerie Wilson was part of an operation 3 years ago tracking the proliferation of nuclear weapons material into Iran. And the sources allege that when Mrs. Wilson's cover was blown, the administration's ability to track Iran's nuclear ambitions was damaged as well. Today marks one of George Bush's defining moments as America's leader. It was today, 3 years ago, that he uttered his victory over Iraq speech. Quote, "Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed," unquote. He triumphantly told 5,000 sailors aboard the USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier on May 1, 2003. 93% of American casualties in Iraq have been since he gave that speech, leading many to question whether or not he has any sense of what to do to make that country safe once again. Not content with one failed war, Bush is actively trying to create another. This time, though, allies are harder to find. Turkey won't let the U.S. attack Iran from its land. The Turkish Foreign Minister Abdullah Gül said Sunday that his country refused a request from the United States to attack Iran from its Air Force base in Incirlik, despite the U.S. offer of a nuclear reactor, according to a report in Al-Binyan. In an interview for the United Arab Emirates newspaper, Gül noted that America's efforts to attack Iran are imaginary and that Turkey's stance is strategic and refuses the use of its land for any belligerent activity against neighboring countries. Vermonters are tired of the Boy King. An effort that began in March culminated Monday when three Vermont communities delivered a message to House Speaker Dennis Hastert, "Start the process to impeach President George Bush." Six Vermont towns passed resolutions on a town meeting day called for Bush's impeachment. On Monday, Ellen Tenney, a bookstore owner from Rockingham, Vermont, hand-delivered petitions to Hastert, an Illinois Republican. Hastert was not present, and aides were said to be bland and not very friendly. Today's immigrant rallies affect businesses. Immigrant-owned taco stands and bakeries from California to New Jersey largely were shut down on Monday, but most U.S. restaurants reported no shortage of busboys and cooks despite a national boycott and major protests by pro-immigration activists. In Los Angeles's predominantly Latino neighborhood of Echo Park, mom-and-pop bakeries joined other businesses in closing for the day. The same was true in a largely Hispanic area of Jersey City, New Jersey, where a normally busy Mexican restaurant was closed at lunchtime. This is News on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
I can take care of myself. I can make a peanut butter sandwich. I can brush my teeth and I can give myself a bath. I can walk home alone from school. I can pick dinner from the trash behind the deli. I can watch the baby for the whole weekend. I can keep a baseball bat by my bed just in case there's trouble. Don't worry about me. I can take care of myself.
If you're in jail, who'll be there to take care of your family? Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Immigrant reform rallies are taking place around the country. In cities and towns around the country, rallies were held today with the theme being, quote, "A Day Without Immigrants," unquote. 400,000 rallied in Chicago, 100,000 in Los Angeles, tens of thousands in New York, and hundreds of thousands more in smaller cities around the nation. The rallying call was "Si se puede," or "Yes, we can." This is the sentiment of a population of undocumented immigrants who want to become citizens and have all the rights and responsibilities of being U.S. citizens. The normally bustling downtown Los Angeles produce and garment districts were virtually shut down this morning, and truck traffic at the ports was down sharply after many employees protesting the nation's immigrant policies did not show up for work. The dearth of activity in the produce and garment districts, both heavily dependent on immigrant labor, was so far the most dramatic sign of the impact of today's organized immigrant protests on local commerce. Only sporadic business closures and staffing shortages reported across the remainder of Southern California. South of the border today, Bolivia's President Evo Morales decreed the nationalization of that country's natural gas industry today, following through on an election pledge to increase control over the energy industry. Under that decision, he ordered foreign firms to send production to a state company for sales and industrialization, and said that the state will also recover Bolivian hydrocarbon companies that were privatized in the 1990s, with the state taking over shares that are in the hands of foreign companies and of semi-public Bolivian entities, according to an AP report based on Mr. Morales' speech, which was delivered at the country's San Alberto gas and oil field. Morales also ordered the military to occupy the natural gas fields. Protesters seeking a shutdown of the Guantanamo Bay U.S. prison camp marched to the U.S. mission to the United Nations on Monday and held an interfaith service in its entryway after building owners asked New York police not to arrest them. Nearly half of the 135 demonstrators, many of them members of the clergy, had hoped to be arrested as an act of civil disobedience to protest what they say is torture at the U.S. camp. When police announced that they would not be jailed, protest leaders boasted of a symbolic victory, saying the police told them that U.S. diplomats had heard their message. Several of the protesters dressed in orange jumpsuits and wore black hoods over their heads as they knelt in front of the privately owned building in prayer after their march from U.N. headquarters a half mile away. For Head On Radio Network News, I'm Bruce Birch.
I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Hour 2. You know how to reach the program, 877, the number 4, head on 877-443-2366. Jump right in. Our good friend Bo Webb from Coal River Mountain Watch has kindly stayed on through the break so we can continue this conversation. Are you there, Bo?
Yes, I'm here.
Wonderful. Now, to get back to the original purpose of your call, a group of individuals is leaving tomorrow. Was it today?
Tomorrow morning.
Yeah, leaving tomorrow morning from Charleston, I assume.
Correct.
And headed to New York to the United Nations. Are there any apart from just sharing the information? Are there any goals? Are there any hopes for some sort of action?
Yes. What we plan on doing and what our goal is, Bob, is to inform them and make them aware that the United States government and the United States government delegation to the UN Commission on Sustainable Development, they advocate coal and nuclear as safe, clean, and affordable forms of energy. And they oppose any government commitments to clean, renewable energy sources. So we can't get any results with our government, so we want to take the message to the United Nations that coal is not clean, it is not cheap, because Appalachians are paying the price with their health. And our goal is to get the Commission on Sustainable Development to include our situation in their statement. They'll have a statement forthcoming after the meetings are held up there. And we want that our story told and our story included in their statement. A lot of countries look at the United States as a model for sustainable
right.
development, but we want them to be aware that this is not a model that you want to use. Coal is not clean. There's no future in coal. It's going to dwindle away eventually anyway, and we need to start turning to renewable sources and spending money on research and development. If we can spend $1 billion per week in an Iraq war, an oil war, why can't we spend half of that a week on research for renewables?
It
doesn't make any sense.
A tenth of it. We're not spending a tenth of it.
Well, I think the problem is that we have a government that is subservient to the extractive industries.
Exactly, Bo. They don't want to. You know, the pusher never wants the junkie to get well.
Exactly. And they want to keep you addicted to that. And it's getting back to what you're talking about, these children on TV and these commercials. That's what they're doing. They are indoctrinating our children into believing this myth. So that
right.
they can continue making the money. And it's all about the dollars. It's not about the wealth or the welfare of our planet. It's about the dollars. And they just don't see. They don't see what they need to truly be doing.
Well, that commercial ran when my son was still down here with me. And he looked at me and he said, "Dad, that little girl's lying."
Yeah.
I said, "Yep." He said, "She ought to be ashamed of herself."
And, you know, we have to continue to counter that. We have to continue to fight that. We need to continue to inform and educate the American public and the world public, as far as it goes, as to what the truth is. In a way, it's unbelievable that I have a hard time coming to grips with the fact that money is beyond children's health.
Yes.
It means more to these coal companies than it does than the children's health. And you take Marsh Fork Elementary School, I always rant about that because that is a situation that should not be happening in any place in the world, let alone America. We've been turned into a third world resource here in the Coal River Valley. We have
yes.
one job that we can do, and it's to go mine coal, surface mine, blow the mountain up. And now, the direct result of lax government regulations and ineffective enforcement agencies, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection in particular, the federal EPA, and the government, the governor and his staff and his administrators, are allowing this situation to continue at Marsh Fork Elementary School is beyond me. Right now, you can stand in the schoolyard and look up behind the school above the sludge dam, and they have stripped that mountain behind there, and they're going to blast it. And all that runoff is going to go into that sludge dam, filling up even more than it is already. I guess maybe we're going to have another Buffalo Creek before people wake up. But, you know, our intention is to stop it before it happens and to get those kids out of that situation and get them a new school built.
Well, you know, if that was happening in any other country, we would be moaning about it and decrying the way that they were treating the children. But here, you know, in Appalachia, it's okay.
Well,
because, we are a third world nation, and some might not realize it, and you might not even realize it, Bo, but even where I'm sitting here in Alabama, I am sitting in the last little knee foothills of the Appalachian mountain chain.
Mm-hmm.
And just to get people to understand what's happening in their own backyard is a Herculean effort. So I wish these folks all the luck in the world as they go. Now you talked about sustainability a few minutes ago, and I want to touch on this for just a second. There is an issue in West Virginia with regard to a wind farm,
right,
in Greenbrier County,
right.
And it astonishes me and I think they're fake environmentalists myself. There's a gang of people who have banded together to try to stop those windmills from being built on top of an abandoned strip mine.
Right. Well, some of those folks, and I'm not saying all of them, but some of those folks have ties to coal, and that's their motivation for doing it, in my opinion. But
yeah, to again, because the pusher doesn't want the junkie to get well.
Exactly. And, you know, to me, it's like, you know, they're over there, and they don't want to take responsibility for the planet. You know, if you are truly an environmentalist, then you need to make certain sacrifices. And while we're over here across the mountain from them getting poisoned, and our children being put at risk every day, and our mountains been taken away, our water been poisoned, our soil been poisoned with toxins and heavy metals, they're over there fighting a renewable energy resource. It makes no sense. If you are a true environmentalist, it doesn't make any sense at all. So,
no,
you know,
it doesn't.
You're not,
and like I said, I think
your so-called view shed to save our sorry asses over here in the Coal River Valley. And it really starts irking me when I start thinking about it. You know, you're a hypocrite. And
not just a hypocrite, a deadly one.
Yes.
A dangerous hypocrite.
You're aiding and abetting a criminal act that's ongoing in the Coal River Valley. And you need to stand up, and you need to be accountable, and you need to be responsible, and you need to accept some sacrifice yourself. I say this, let's exchange, let's trade. You take our mountaintop removal, and we'll take your wind farms gladly, no problem. Put them up on our mountains.
Well, that's the thing. If they don't take the wind farm, the mountaintop removal will get to them, Bo.
Well, yeah, actually, that is the only thing that's going to save their mountains is windmills. They're just really not looking at the entire picture. They want to save their view shed, but if wind farms are not there, there are, it was stated there's 43 of the 55 counties in West Virginia have mineable coal. I'll guarantee you that Greenbrier is one of those counties.
Oh,
so
I know
it
is.
If you want to save your mountains in Greenbrier, then you should embrace windmills, because they're going to come right behind it and blow it up if you don't.
Well, and I'm sick of this talk about viewscapes and view sheds and view pollution. They're windmills. I mean, I've got a buddy who went to Holland, and he sent me back a postcard. You know what was on the postcard, Bo? A windmill.
Well, they're everywhere in Holland. And Germany is building more.
And even in the western United States, they are tourist attractions.
Right. I think that, it's just stunning that people just don't want to take response. They don't want to be part of the solution. They just want to, okay, those folks over there in the coal fields, they're doomed. Let them, you know, they're the sacrificial lambs.
The ovens are already hot. Why object to the concentration camp? I know. That's like our good friend Ben Birch just dropped me a note, and he said with regard to all that oil and coal that's still available, and there's no shortage. He notes that some of that oil and coal is in Antarctica.
Yeah. Yeah. And in Alabama and Texas and Missouri. You know, there's a lot of coal in Missouri. It's not good coal, but they'll go after it.
And it's not gettable, you know.
It's not
there's a lot of lying involved here. And is Maria going up?
Yes. Yes, she's going with us. And
you're going as well?
I'm going. Maria's going. Larry Gibson is going.
Wonderful.
We have some pretty powerful people going. We have some folks from Rawl over in Mingo County that are going, that their wells have been polluted, destroyed, poisoned. It's unbelievable. I met with some of those folks over there, and it just ripped my heart out, Bob. Those folks over there are sick. They've been drinking their well water for the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and it's been contaminated the entire time. They have.
Well, yeah, and the thing, you know, it used to be a joke that we would tell about Mexico. Yeah, if you go to Mexico, don't drink the water.
Yeah, now it's if you go.
Don't drink.
County,
yeah, don't drink the water in America either.
Right. There's some folks over there that are really ill. Their children are ill, And here's a typical, if I can maybe sum this up as fast as I can.
Okay.
Typical of the coal industry. An attorney named Kevin Thompson filed a lawsuit on their behalf in Raw. And so he filed it against Massey Energy, who has been mining underground underneath these people's homes, collapsing their wells, and they got an underground injection permit where they dumped sludge underground and it contaminated and got into their wells. These people are sick. So Mr. Thompson filed a lawsuit on their behalf. Well, that ticked off certain people, employees of Massey, I should say, you know, certain administrative people, CEOs and whatnot. So he's been a target for them. So I guess a couple of weeks ago or last week or whatnot, the CEO of Massey filed a defamation of character lawsuit against Kevin Thompson.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Oh, yeah. Because he's simply trying to represent his people. And but I got to give Mr. Thompson credit. He turned the tables on the Massey CEO last week when he was the Massey CEO was giving a speech at the Republican fundraiser near Huntington. And Mr. Thompson had been working on another lawsuit against that company and filed it that day or the day before and had a private detective serve the CEO of Massey while he was giving his speech at the fundraiser.
That's beautiful.
We need more of that.
Yeah, we do.
We need more people.
And well, you know,
like
I don't.
That.
You know, I don't think Mr. Blankenstein is terribly, terribly intelligent sometimes, because among other things, he doesn't realize that by filing that defamation suit, he has opened himself to one of the great legal truisms,
exactly.
Bo, and that is the notion that truth is an absolute defense.
Well, that will be the defense. That will be the defense. The truth. I mean, what better defense is there? You know, and yeah, he's opening himself up, but he seems to think that he can do what he wants to do. I think he can do that until the stockholders, shareholders decide that this guy is out there and he needs to be replaced. And then we might see.
Well, he was supposed to knock off a year ago, wasn't he? He was going to retire.
But, for some reason, he stayed on.
Brother. Well, Bo, have a great trip. Maybe give us a call from up there and let us know how it's going, please.
I can do that. I'll do that Thursday.
And just please give a big old howdy to everybody and tell them I miss them and can't wait to get back to the hills.
I will. And thank you so much for all that you're doing, Bob.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And you guys just, I'm so doggone honored to call you friend that, well, it means a heck of a lot.
Well, it goes both ways. Thank you so
much. Thanks, Bo.
Mm-hmm.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And our good friend David in Maine has waited after our abortive attempt to have a phone call the first time through. I think we got it licked now, David.
I think we do too, Bob.
Hallelujah.
Yes, I'm sorry about the last time because I was eating ice cream and I must have missed that.
Oh, well, yeah, rub it in. I'm sitting here starving.
Oh, I didn't know that. I guess tonight's theme that I want to talk about is heroes. In particular, I have three on the list.
Okay.
The first one is obviously Stephen Colbert, which brings me to this point, which I think we should all be aware of, Bob. Karl Rove is not the evil genius, because it would take 3 minutes to find out that Colbert was a satirist and his background. It wouldn't even take 3 minutes. It would take 1 minute, because I would also like to point out, I don't know if you saw this, but this was under the radar, but he also did an interview with Bill Kristol.
No.
Yes. He did an interview with Bill Kristol, and he brought up Project of a New American Century. And you should have seen him squirming. He was squirming in his seat, and he goes, and Colbert's like, didn't Rumsfeld sign that document too? And then Kristol's like, yeah, but Rumsfeld's not a part of our organization.
The hell, he's not.
Yeah. Well, if you get a chance, you should definitely watch. I think it's on Crooks and Liars, the whole interview and whatnot.
Oh, I can't wait. Did you catch Colbert when he leaned over to George and he said, "So, thank you for agreeing to come on the show. Is Tuesday good for you?"
Yeah. You could see George's face making contortions and whatnot. And he made the same faces when he was confronted with John Kerry, when John Kerry was going on about all the flaws that he made with the war. It was the same kind of gestures and whatnot.
Well, he looks like a three-year-old, David. He does.
And you know what's scary, though, was if you look at the other guy, the Bush impersonator, whatever his name, Bridges.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Bush's reaction, I'm not going to say Bush is schizophrenic, but he looked uncomfortable at times what this guy was saying, but then at other times his other side kicked in and he was laughing. It wasn't like he was, it was kind of scary because it wasn't like you, I've never seen anything like it. It wasn't like he was faking. It was like he was realizing the failures of himself and this administration. And at the same time, he would switch over to that other guy who would be that Joker comedian. I think we're dealing with a real schizophrenic.
Well, you know, there's the whole dry drunk thing has been explored, and there's a, I forget the, what?
The Bush on the couch.
Yeah, and there's, I can't remember the name of the disease, Ben Birch knows it.
Yeah.
But it's something that happens to the brain after just horrifying levels of intoxication and chemical torment of the synapses. That, you know, people think that this guy's got the photograph there at WD40.com. Did you get a look at that yet?
Yeah, I saw that.
Our friend David in Tennessee, the other David, we've got a bunch of Davids, David. he emailed in and he said, yep, Mussolini, Il Duce, Bush, Mussolini, Bush, same guy. And it is. It's that snarly little smirk that looks exactly like, I mean, you can go and find, you could do a separated at birth photograph. Maybe John Fox or Bruce Birchall find that smirking photo of Mussolini and put it next to Bush, and you know, it's one of those Fox moments. We report, you decide.
I couldn't agree more. And I thought one of my favorite comments was comparing Bush to Rocky Balboa. Oh God.
Yeah, and then he finally goes, oh, wait, Rocky lost that fight.
Yeah, he says, except Apollo Creed is everybody, is everything. He says, everything in the universe.
The president is Rocky Balboa, and Apollo Creed is the rest of the world.
And then that other comment where he made, there's nothing more noble than generals standing by a bank of computers. Oh, my God. I cannot believe.
Did you hear the nervous laughter in the room?
Oh, these aristocrats don't keep up on what is the shift in the public perception. They don't understand. They're so stuck in a bubble. I was listening to Matt Drudge Sunday, and he was like, he didn't know what to make of it. He's like, boy, I think Colbert really got on the president's bad side. You think?
Oh, well, you know, did you see the handshake?
I missed the handshake. I mean, I just
at the end of it, the handshake. I mean, I don't think skin molecules actually made contact, because it was sort of the Colbert walked by Bush and, you know, okay, get him out of here.
And I looked at the people who were having the most fun, which was kind of weird, was the Wilsons in the audience.
Oh, yeah, and when he said, Valerie, like, oh, my God, did I just say that I meant Joseph Wilson's wife?
Did you hear what happened on MSNBC? Schuster has put out that Wilson was, Valerie Plame was doing work for Iran now.
Yeah, that's been out, that's been banging around for a couple of months.
Mm.
And because there, the CIA knew that Iraq had no nuclear intentions or abilities whatsoever. What she was working on was Iran and Pakistan, if I recall correctly.
I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, all the puzzle pieces form together. And then the other hero I wanted to mention was the Neil Young, obviously, with the Living with War album, which I listened to, and I thought it was really impressive with how he delivered his message and stayed on topic for a whole album. I listened to the whole thing. I was really impressed with the theme of just a basic message, and I think he has a hit on his hands for an album. Now the third hero is going to be
okay.
One out of the blue for you.
Okay.
It's going to be straight out of left field, but it's Al Jorgensen of Ministry. Now, Ministry is the guy who did that Jesus Built My Hot Rod. I don't know if you remember that song.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, okay, and he's always, and see, the thing about Al Jorgensen is even in his most heroin-induced head-nodding coma, he's always had this astute mind through it all. Even in his most hellish nightmare of drug addiction, he's always had this politically astute and aware mind. I don't think a lot of people realize this. His album is completely based on the times which we are living right now,
mm-hmm.
the administration. He has songs called, like, Yellow Cake, Khyber Pass, Lies, Lies, Lies. Just basically the whole album is basically about what this administration, this empire has taken us through. But the interesting thing about this album is the shock-provoking cover, which I've never seen, Bob. I've never seen a cover like this that's actually on a mainstream, that's actually on a major label record. It has Bush crucified on the cover. And in both hands he's making the sign of the Satan.
Oh, you mean with the Ronnie James Dio with the two fingers and
both hands. So, but this is the clever thing. It's displayed on an oil field, and he's got his body dumped in the oil barrel so you can't see his feet. And there's oil coming out of his chest like blood.
Is there somewhere we can go and see this, David?
Oh, it's on Amazon.com.
Okay, and give the name of the album again, please.
Oh, the album title's a doozy, too. Rio Grande Blood.
And the artist again.
Ministry. It's a real, for those people who aren't into really heavy music, I don't think it's out yet. I think it comes out May 2nd or May the next week over.
Well, I'm sure that Bill O'Reilly will be having kittens with crocheted tails if he ever hears about it, but you know,
on the back album cover, it's even funnier, Bob, because it has Rumsfeld looking like an evil pharaoh.
Oh, this is gorgeous. This I got to see. David, we got to get out of here for the bottom of the hour break.
No problem, Bob. I just wanted to mention those things.
Hey, thanks for all of that. I appreciate it.
No problem. Have a good night.
You too. Glad we got the phone problems fixed.
Yeah.
Oh, it feels good to be normal or something approaching it again. Listen, let's take the bottom of the hour break. It's time for your Cup of Joe report for the evening. When we come back, more of your phone calls to 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. This is Head On, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
Shelter of mountains as ancient as time, but little by little they're killing our mountains in their big D9 dozers and giant drag lines.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. An old nemesis of mine commenting on the blog made it a point to say that while he wishes me great success in the future, he looks forward to the continued failure of my political ideas. This confuses me because I don't happen to see anything wrong with my political ideas. I believe, for example, in free and fair elections because I believe that we have the right and the duty to govern ourselves, and elections are the process by which we achieve that. I believe our society needs a balance of power between government and private enterprise, and a free press that isn't afraid to challenge either one. These are all things that, in principle, most people would agree with regardless of party affiliation. But I think there is a fundamental misunderstanding about what kind of world we all want to live in that is intentionally perpetrated by people whose only interest is their own ambitions. It's the assorted warmongers and power brokers of the world that get us to fight among ourselves for their benefit. if we were to be honest with ourselves and stop assuming that our so-called leaders had our best interest in mind, we would find that we have far more in common with each other than we have been led to believe. Unfortunately, fear is a powerful weapon, and too many of us are perfectly willing to be manipulated. When we give in to our fears, we give up our rights, our freedoms, our money, and the better part of our humanity. Maybe one day soon we'll realize that, as Roosevelt said, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show via streaming audio every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he Nureyev? Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree, and I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer, too. And when we do, it can be very hard for us to talk about it and get support, because nobody expects a man to have breast cancer. But I know one place to get reliable, timely information about breast cancer. Breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet that translates all those big medical words your doctor uses into plain English. It helps you understand what kind of cancer you have and what treatments are out there. It helps you get your head together and make a list of questions for your next doctor's visit. And it gives you all kinds of other good information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org. The first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
All right, welcome back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. God, it feels good to be doing a real, you know, and it works and it goes and thing and oh, please let it stay this way. I'm a happy guy. Let's not fool around any too many people on hold, that kind of thing. Let's go straight to Luke. Luke is with us. Hey, Luke, you're Head On.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, doing fine. I tell you what, I'm sitting here right now watching Mr. Oberman, and they're doing the thing about Colbert.
Oh yeah.
And I'll be honest, I got home a little after six. I have sat and watched the, you know, two or three different networks. This is the first time I've actually seen where they carry Colbert. You know what I mean? I watched Blitzer, and then I watched Dobbs, and I watched spitball. And every one of them talked about it, but this is the first one I've seen where they've actually showed it. You know what I mean? Actually carried where you could hear what he's saying without showing just a picture. And the thing that amazes me is, just remember 5 or 6 years ago when we had to sit, and every time we turned around, MSNBC especially, and CNN just kept running pieces of the IMUS.
That's exactly what I was thinking about. You could not turn the television off without getting a little clip of Imus up there making an ass out of himself over Bill Clinton.
But isn't it amazing how they'll talk about it, but they will not carry it. You know what I mean? It's like, Colbert was there. Yeah. That's about the whole of the coverage.
Well, were you as floored as I was, Luke, when he said that this isn't the Titanic, it's the Hindenburg?
I like the one when he was talking to the generals down in the audience. Wouldn't let you retire, would he? Then we have this thing today with Powell. It's like, well, damn, Colin, you say you've got a spine, so why didn't you just walk away?
And see, that's the problem I have with the so-called rebellious generals who are criticizing Rumsfeld now. They were there, Luke. They had a chance to criticize them. They could have resigned their commissions. They could have come right out and criticized and said, you know, this is crazy talk. They could have done any of it.
The only one I sent to that thing from Greg Palast.
Yeah.
Think about Jay Garner. I mean, that's one of those ones I still have not seen any of these guys talk about it. And when you read that thing from Greg Palast, I mean, what happened to Jay Garner was just downright crime, because I think he would have got a lot more of it moving than all of a sudden.
Yeah, don't unpack your bags, Jay.
Yeah. Because, oh, my God, he wanted to have an election in 90 days. How dare you? We have to drag this out for a year.
Well, sure. And now have you seen this proposal from Joe Biden that was put out today, Luke?
I heard something about this stuff, but what all was it?
He's suggesting the creation of three autonomous states within Iraq, the Sunni South, or the Shia South, the Sunni Middle, and the Kurdish North.
They'll never let that happen.
Under the rubric of a strong federal government, central government.
Because Iran would absorb the South, the Turks would not want to absorb the Kurds, and the Kurds would want to be absorbed, so to speak. And the Sunni are sitting there in the middle going, hello.
Well, see, you know, I always like to try to connect dots. And I had seen this story about the Turks refusing to allow us to bomb Iran from their Incirlik air base.
Yep.
And then a couple of hours later, I'm flipping by CNN, and here's the story about Biden suggesting this three-state solution. And giving the Kurds any kind of autonomy in the north of Iraq is going to make the Turks absolutely go freaking crazy.
And these are people who are not real wound tight to begin with. I mean, if you want one group of people in that area not to deal with other than the Israelis, it's the Turks. Because they'll kill just to kill.
They're not going to take any crap.
Uh-uh.
They wiped out 1 million Armenians for being Armenians.
Yeah. I mean, they're the kinds that if you say boo, that by the time you're finished saying boo, they beat the hell out of you and kept on going. Yeah. They don't play around. They take no prisoners, so to speak. Oh.
And yet at the same time, they wouldn't let us use our air bases to attack Iraq. They won't let us use their air bases to attack Iran. I think that's sound policy.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, we don't want to get involved with this. It's between you and them if you all want to do this. I mean, they aren't going to attack us as long as we're sitting here and we're all fairly friendly with them. You know, it's like, they're not best friends, but I mean, you know, it's sort of one of those things, you know, we watch each other out of the corner of each other's eye, but we ain't going to shoot at each other. Not seriously.
But do you see how it works out, though? They refuse to let us attack Iran from Turkey, and so by this afternoon there's a plan being floated around by so-called presidential hopeful Joe Biden that would create Turkey's worst nightmare.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, I'm not so much of an idealist or purist or anything that I think that a Democrat wouldn't be complicit. Yeah, you know, a Democrat like Biden. Sure, he'd be complicit with the administration.
Well, the thing, though, is you got to wonder, did Joe put the story out, or did maybe somebody at the White House put the story out? You know, maybe it's one of those things Joe's been floating forever. And all of a sudden the White House said, hey, look at what Biden's doing, you know. And point their media people at Biden.
Yeah, I mean, that's a toothpick under Turkey's fingernail for sure.
But, hey, Bob, I want to ask you something totally off different.
Sure.
Something I told you about a while back. Did you ever look at that Vanity Fair article on West Virginia?
Yes.
How was that? Because I say, I don't know the people up there. Was that pretty accurate?
It was spot on.
Okay.
And the National Geographic article was spot on.
Well, I'll tell you what.
People really don't have, and see, I mean, you're in Knoxville there, Luke. There's mountaintop removal going on not far from you.
Oh, yeah. But I saw this, you saw the story, was it the last couple of days? Is it down, was it in Australia or New Zealand?
Tasmania, the two miners.
Yeah, and they're still alive. And it's like,
yeah.
Then we had the story with the survivor of the thing, you know, where he was talking about the air packs. And it's
right.
It's like, you know, that this is something that they already, you know, like you said, this is something that they should be screaming about. You know, it's like the thing with Canadians. It's like, that's the minimum of what we should have, is the Canadian system, you know, air safe rooms and like I said, redundancies in these systems, where, you know, if it goes wrong, you'd be able to support 125%. You know what I mean? You have a half dozen down there, you know, probably going to go out and have
right.
Extras. Because that's just ridiculous to do that kind of job, and essentially, you know, it's like, well, let's check for gas leak. Somebody light a match, you know.
Yeah.
So I mean, some of that stuff just blows your mind.
Well, it does, and you know, the phosphate miners up in Canada that were found in a room playing cards.
Yeah.
You know, they had a couple of cases of Vienna sausage and some crackers and fresh water, and you know, they just sat back and knew they'd be okay.
They just sit around and wait because they knew it was coming eventually.
Yeah, because they're, you know, they've got a responsive government. They've got a government that cares, not a bunch of cronies and lackadaisical murderers.
Well, when you put the companies, hatchet men, excuse the term, in charge of regulations, well, what do you expect? You know, do we need to put
you get death?
No.
I mean, the idea that. That they had to share these, and first of all, these self-rescuers, I mean, I've seen these things. They weigh about 5 pounds. They have to be, they're carried on your belt as you go into the mine, and they provide an hour of air.
Yeah.
And under the best of circumstances, you cannot walk 5 miles three or five miles out of a mine, in an hour.
Yeah, you ain't getting out in an hour. I mean, that's just, unless you're going up in the shaft right then, you ain't getting out in that hour. So that's just ridiculous. But, you know, if you haven't seen it, did you see the article in Time, the one on Al Gore?
No, I haven't seen that one yet.
Okay. Get a chance to look at that. I tell you what, at the end of the month, his movie's coming out, so I'd say you're going to see a build-up to it as the month goes on.
Well, I read someone the other day saying that he was running the best presidential campaign that he had ever seen run. And yet he consistently says, "I will not, I will not, I will not."
Well, I mean, which is the thing. I mean, have you seen what they were talking about this weekend? They were talking about mayor up in New York, Giuliani.
Oh, Giuliani, yeah.
Essentially, Giuliani will not essentially campaign. He's just going to be sitting there and right at the very end jump into it. Said because you know the minute he jumps in, said you know the right wing is going to tear him apart. So said the key to it is to keep that time as short as possible. You know, he's going to let McCain go out there and let everybody sort of essentially take, you know, use him for target practice. And then by the time it gets down where they're having to make the decision, Giuliani steps in fresh and looking clean, you know. And
yeah.
Hopefully by then, you know, that McCain will be just so beat up that he can just walk in.
Right. Well, I don't know. It's hard to say what's going to happen. Giuliani, there's just no way that he can there's no way he can be the Republican nominee because they'll lose all of those mouth breathing religion industry fools who only vote on one issue and that's two or three God, gays and guns because Giuliani's pro gay, he's anti gun and he's sort of ridiculous. I mean, he's not ridiculously, but he's pro-choice, and they're not going to stomach that.
Well, I'm hoping this works out, though, because that's the way it would be nice. It would be have McCain halfway beaten up, then hit Giuliani, hit him right at the end. Then the fun part with Giuliani is, well, let's see, which mistress do we want to interview next?
Yeah, right.
And the fun part would have him actually make it to be the Republican nominee and watch Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson just absolutely turn inside out.
Oh, they would have kittens with crocheted tails.
Because it would be interesting to see if which would they do? Would either you're going to have to, you know, totally put the cloak on and cut and go in there and flip the switch, or you're going to have to essentially almost split the party.
Well, and that's what will happen. I mean, that's why McCain is delivering the commencement address at Jerry Falwell's Reverend Moon University.
I know, but see that's the one thing we can kind of hope for is, like I say, just wait there at the very end and hope that, you know, like I say, McCain's beaten up enough that Giuliani steps in and makes it a real fight.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they get the coronation this time through that they got with Dear Leader.
No, because like I say, well, and especially McCain, who, you know, who's kissing every press butt he could. Now he's going to have to explain some things, you know, because they're going to ask him all those nice little questions about, wait a minute, here's what you said 3 years ago, you know, when you were running in 2004.
Right.
And what, now why are you saying these things? So
it's
going to get interesting.
Well, I think it will. There's so many of these people on the run. Most of the conventional wisdom that I'm reading says that Rick Santorum is simply dead in the water in Pennsylvania.
Well, the way I've been reading some of that is, like I say, it's one of those things. You just hoping that some of this more stuff, this K Street project, just stays right in the paperwork. You know what I mean? So.
Well, did you see this business about Duke Cunningham and the guy who gave him all the bribes and what he said?
Now we're getting into hookers, live boy.
Yeah. You know, live boy or a dead girl. That's what we've said all along. Would bring these people down.
So this is getting interesting here. And like I say, somewhere in all that stuff, Santorum's name is mentioned because he was the head of the K Street project. So some of this stuff had to be running through his office. So it'll just be interesting to see, you know, where all this stuff shows up down the line. If you know how much they try to keep it out of the mainstream, and how much it actually gets people out talking about it as it gets closer. Because unfortunately, the trial isn't going to happen until afterwards. But we have lawyers who get to file these nice little motions beforehand. So there will be stuff being shown, saying, you know, here's this, and then they'll have to comment on it. Lost you, Bob?
I don't think so, but I'm checking.
That's okay. I still want to keep on talking, you know.
Go right ahead.
But like I say, it'll be interesting with this stuff with Santorum, because like I say, he was the head of the K Street project, and then he's the one they put in charge of cleaning up the K Street project. So, like I say, a whole bunch of questions he's going to have to answer.
Yeah, but will he answer them?
No, of course not. But that's what'll make him look even worse.
I don't think we've heard anything that's been.
Oh, it's like I say, after the election, that's the one thing they don't want is God. Let's see Court TV carrying the Abramoff trial. Oh, that will be a fun little. You know, it'll be interesting when his books. You know, I mean, when all of his stuff starts coming out, what all he was touching.
Well,
you know what I mean?
He's rolling on everybody.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like they said, you know, the thing about the photographs. You remember they were talking about them? It's like, wait till he opens up his photo albums and starts handing out pictures of him with Bush.
Oh, they've already found some. You know,
there are more. You know there are. I mean, some of these things where he was invited to the White House, not just ones where he's across the room. You know, they say there were, you know, some of these where they were sitting down there talking to each other, you know, chair next to chair, so, you know, some of those things.
Well, he was bringing people to the White House for lunch.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and
we
then
saw the thing today where good old what's his name, head of the Judicial Watch, they had the thing today where they've got access to the White House logs, to the internet.
Well, so, are you there?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, I got lost. I thought I lost you, but it turns out we lost me.
That's okay. Agnes is a delightful conversation.
Agnes is a delightful conversationalist. No, all I was going to point out is that the wheels, you know, our buddy Wayne predicted right after the November 2004 election that the wheels would come off in no time.
Well, yeah,
and
it's one of those things, like I say, smoke and mirrors only last so long, you know.
Exactly.
So eventually it's going to come. I tell you what, you're going to be up there on the front row seat. A part of this for the next, because on the election thing we were talking about, is because, like I say, you're the main opponent for McCain is going to be Allen. I mean, that's where the people who don't like McCain are going to go to is to George Allen.
Right.
And I think that's where it's going to be one-on-one for the once they really start doing that. So.
Well, you know where the next big issue is going to come, Luke, for, you know, to try to keep the hateful mouth breathers motivated?
Yeah. Which one?
It's this non-binding resolution that was introduced in the Senate today. Did you catch this one?
No, which one?
Non-binding Senate resolution mandating that the national anthem shall only be sung in English.
Yeah, you're wondering about that. It's like, you know, it'd be interesting when they follow the money back on all this stuff. Who is funding some of this stuff at the basis?
Well, that's possible, but I wouldn't want to say that we're prescient or prophetic or anything, but Bruce Birch and I were talking 3-4 weeks ago, and I said, somebody needs to translate "This land is your land" into Spanish. And it didn't, and here we are 3 weeks later, and okay, so they didn't do "This land is your land," they did the national anthem. They took it and did me one better.
Well, you're sitting there going, you translated the one song that's almost unsingable in any language.
Yeah.
I mean,
how many people out there realize, Luke, that the national anthem, the music for it, came from a drinking song in the Baltimore waterfront taverns or whatever?
Well, you know, it's one of those things a lot of people still say, and I do too. I'd rather have America as the national anthem, you know, if you had to pick one.
Yeah, something that somebody can sing.
Yeah. Because, like I say, it's one of the things that anybody I've ever heard sing, you know, the professional talks about it, they say that's the worst, not worst in that respect, but it's just phonetically.
There are notes in that song, Luke, that Geddy Lee from Rush couldn't hit, that Steve Perry from Journey couldn't hit.
We used to have an opera singer do it at the college ball games, you know what I mean, and he was straining. Because, I mean, you know, right there at the end, I mean, you're going the whole range just about. You know,
you're
at the range where you're talking about the best person to do it. Probably is I've heard it's probably like Celine Dion, but like I say, she's got a range that can do it. You know what I mean? It's like going from the bottom to the top.
Hey, I tell you what, Luke, we gotta hit it for the top of the hour. Good talking to you, man.
All right, bud. Talk at you later. Bye.
Have a great evening.
You too.
Bye now. All right, when we come back, more of your phone calls, they're always welcome. You know that. This is this is Conversation Radio. This is what Conversation Radio sounds like. It's people talking. It's not 3 minutes of blah, blah, and then, you know, I pull a flush phlegm ball and start running my mouth. Everybody gets a chance to talk. Bob@headonradio.com is the email address. 877-443-2366 is the phone number. Jump right in. I'm Bob.
Their black hearts look the same, with a picture and a name of the ones who broke their hearts. The disappointed, all congregate in my house. Their voices filled with grief that they won't be to be chief of the tribe with broken hearts.
Head on Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. Outed CIA agent is confirmed to have been working on Iran-related issues. Intelligence sources say Valerie Wilson was part of an operation 3 years ago tracking the proliferation of nuclear weapons material into Iran. And the sources allege that when Mrs. Wilson's cover was blown, the administration's ability to track Iran's nuclear ambitions
was damaged as well. Today marks one of George Bush's defining moments as America's leader. It was today, 3 years ago, that he uttered his victory over Iraq speech. Quote, "Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed," unquote. He triumphantly told 5,000 sailors aboard the USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier on May 1, 2003. 93% of American casualties in Iraq have been since he gave that speech, leading many to question whether or not he has any sense of what to do to make that country safe once again. Not content with one failed war, Bush is actively trying to create another. This time, though, allies are harder to find. Turkey won't let the U.S. attack Iran from its land. The Turkish Foreign Minister Abdullah Gül said Sunday that his country refused a request from the United States to attack Iran from its Air Force base in Incirlik, despite the U.S. offer of a nuclear reactor, according to a report in Al-Bayan. In an interview for the United Arab Emirates newspaper, Gül noted that America's efforts to attack Iran are imaginary and that Turkey's stance is strategic and refuses the use of its land for any belligerent activity against neighboring countries. Vermonters are tired of the Boy King. An effort that began in March culminated Monday when three Vermont communities delivered a message to House Speaker Dennis Hastert, "Start the process to impeach President George Bush." Six Vermont towns passed resolutions on a town meeting day called for Bush's impeachment. On Monday, Ellen Tenney, a bookstore owner from Rockingham, Vermont, hand-delivered petitions to Hastert, an Illinois Republican. Hastert was not present, and aides were said to be bland and not very friendly. Today's immigrant rallies affect businesses. Immigrant-owned taco stands and bakeries from California to New Jersey largely were shut down on Monday, but most U.S. restaurants reported no shortage of busboys and cooks despite a national boycott and major protests by pro-immigration activists. In Los Angeles's predominantly Latino neighborhood of Echo Park, mom-and-pop bakeries joined other businesses in closing for the day. The same was true in a largely Hispanic area of Jersey City, New Jersey, where a normally busy Mexican restaurant was closed at lunchtime. This is News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
I can take care of myself. I can make a peanut butter sandwich. I can brush my teeth and I can give myself a bath. I can walk home alone from school. I can pick dinner from the trash behind the deli. I can watch the baby for the whole weekend. I can keep a baseball bat by my bed just in case there's trouble. Don't worry about me. I can take care of myself.
If you're in jail, who'll be there to take care of your family? Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Immigrant reform rallies are taking place around the country. In cities and towns around the country, rallies were held today with the theme being, quote, "A Day Without Immigrants," unquote. 400,000 rallied in Chicago, 100,000 in Los Angeles, tens of thousands in New York, and hundreds of thousands more in smaller cities around the nation. The rallying call was "Si se puede," or "Yes, we can." This is the sentiment of a population of undocumented immigrants who want to become citizens and have all the rights and responsibilities of being U.S. citizens. The normally bustling downtown Los Angeles produce and garment districts were virtually shut down this morning, and truck traffic at the ports was down sharply after many employees protesting the nation's immigrant policies did not show up for work. The dearth of activity in the produce and garment districts, both heavily dependent on immigrant labor, was so far the most dramatic sign of the impact of today's organized immigrant protests on local commerce. Only sporadic business closures and staffing shortages reported across the remainder of Southern California. South of the border today, Bolivia's President Evo Morales decreed the nationalization of that country's natural gas industry today, following through on an election pledge to increase control over the energy industry. Under that decision, he ordered foreign firms to send production to a state company for sales and industrialization, and said that the state will also recover Bolivian hydrocarbon companies that were privatized in the 1990s, with the state taking over shares that are in the hands of foreign companies and of semi-public Bolivian entities, according to an AP report based on Mr. Morales' speech, which was delivered at the country's San Alberto gas and oil field. Morales also ordered the military to occupy the natural gas fields. Protesters seeking a shutdown of the Guantanamo Bay U.S. prison camp marched to the U.S. mission to the United Nations on Monday and held an interfaith service in its entryway after building owners asked New York police not to arrest them. Nearly half of the 135 demonstrators, many of them members of the clergy, had hoped to be arrested as an act of civil disobedience to protest what they say is torture at the U.S. camp. When police announced that they would not be jailed, protest leaders boasted of a symbolic victory, saying the police told them that U.S. diplomats had heard their message. Several of the protesters dressed in orange jumpsuits and wore black hoods over their heads as they knelt in front of the privately owned building in prayer after their march from UN headquarters a half mile away. For Head On Radio Network News, I'm Bruce Birch.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Let's do one more hour of High Station Radio. Thanks to everybody listening and chatting along in the chat room at headonradionetwork.com. You know, that's a great little real-time experience for the program, and it was a little stroke of brilliance and genius for John Fox and Bruce Birch to get that thing put together. A quick announcement, a reminder, this Thursday, May the 4th, the Head On Radio Network will make its public debut at the Business Expo at the Raleigh County Armory in Beckley. And we're going to do a special show in addition to my show, you know, that runs in its normal time. We're going to put together a special show from noon to 3 Eastern. I hope you will all join us for that one because we've got a very special guest sitting in with Bruce Birch, who's, I can't be there, but Bruce will be there live and in personam. And he will be joined by a very, very dear friend of mine and a colleague and someone whom I have a great deal of respect for, namely Dr. Bill O'Brien. He was a host at WWNR in Beckley back before they decided to get rid of all the liberals, like me and him. And as a consequence, I'm just thrilled to death to have Dr. Bill back behind a microphone, joining Bruce there. I think you're really going to enjoy his perspective. And I encourage you to tune in from noon to 3 because, well, what more can I say than you know how I am about smart people. I'm blessed, and I love the fact that I get to talk to really intelligent people on this program and work with really intelligent people. And Dr. Bill is among the smartest folks I have ever known, and he has a brilliant perspective and an absolutely wonderful ability to see through the hooey and get to the truth of the matter and the heart of the matter. So from noon to 3, broadcasting live from the Raleigh County Armory on Thursday, May the 4th, our good friend and colleague Bruce Birch alongside Dr. Bill O'Brien. Okay? So, yeah, like I said, I hope you will join us for that. Now, speaking of Bruce Birch, our very good friend and colleague, he went to the A Day Without Immigrants rally today in Greensboro, North Carolina. 10,000 people showed up in support of these human beings who carry the nation on their back. These human beings who have been going back and forth on this continent, crossing rivers and deserts and such various and sundry geological features for something like 28,000 years. And he brought us a report. You're going to enjoy it. From Greensboro, North Carolina, our good friend Bruce Birch on the Head On Radio Network.
This is a Head On Radio Network special report. I'm Bruce Birch. Immigration reform rallies happened around the country today in cities and towns, large and small. in Greensboro, North Carolina, where the population is 250,000. Approximately 10,000 demonstrators showed up to rally. I spoke with Tammy Kelly Rouse, who is one of the principal organizers of the rally.
Well, I'm out here today at the immigration rally on May the 1st, which is International Workers Day also, and I'm talking with Tammy Kelly Rouse, who is one of the principal organizers of today's events. Tammy, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well.
Are you
Thank
pretty
you.
High on what's going on?
Well, I'm excited. I'm very excited about what's going on around the nation, actually. I think it's a wonderful movement that's going on here.
When did you guys get the idea to organize this rally today, and what motivated that?
Well, we had been involved in a couple of the other events around the state, and we didn't have one taking place in Greensboro. So about a week and a half ago, a group of us got together and said, why don't we go ahead and see if we can do one in Greensboro?
10 days ago?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did you get the news out? How did you get the word out?
Well, the first thing we did was send out an invitation for people that were interested in the community to participate in a multicultural, multi-faith event that was going to support comprehensive immigration reform.
Okay.
So we sent an email out, we set the date, time, had the first meeting, and then it kind of went from there.
Okay, so how many are you guys expecting today?
We really have no idea, honest with you, yeah.
Went out over the radio.
It's been over the radio. It's been, we've done a press release. We have a media kit.
Okay. All right, well, so I guess, you know, there's also a lot of police around, too. Did you guys do any interfacing with the power structure here in Greensboro?
Yeah, we did. We took out the appropriate permit, of course, and then we were in touch with the police department. They've been great about helping out and just, you know, figuring out logistics and that kind of thing. So.
And the main message of today is what?
That it, to support comprehensive immigration reform, one that of course, deals with border security, but one that also deals with, you know, we have 12 million undocumented men, women, and children that are just looking for a decent life to, and they're trying to work towards that here, and you can't do one without the other. So we're looking for something just, something comprehensive that covers everything, and, you know, hopefully, you know, this event will pretty much support that.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I also spoke with an immigrant named Olian, who is here working in a plastics manufacturing plant as a mixer.
Olian, tell me about your situation. What you're here in the United States, you're working. Tell me what is your situation here?
Dígame sobre su situación, cuál es su situación aquí en los Estados Unidos.
Mi situación es de como la de millones que hay.
My situation is like one of the other millions.
Vengo porque de alguna manera la situación económica en nuestros países no es la que nos permita vivir modestamente.
One way, you know, that our country is of origin, one way or another, we need to be able to support our families so that we can, you know, live and meet our basic necessities. Modestamente, no, este.
La situación, pues sí, tal vez este, la legal no es la que tenemos mucho, pero una situación muy clara es de que estamos aquí y estamos con una finalidad, trabajar, mejorar como personas, como familias.
Entonces está diciendo que su situación es como muchos aquí, este, que a lo mejor este, para tratar de legalizar la situación.
Y, estoy aquí, al igual que millones, trabajando.
I am here like many millions of others. I am working.
Tratando de mejorar mi calidad de vida.
Trying to improve my quality of life.
Y de darle a mi familia mejor forma de vida.
To provide my family with a better way of life.
Tanto económica como de educación.
economically, just as much as the economics as well as the education.
Y sobre todo respetar que obviamente no estoy en mi país.
And above all, of course, to respect the fact that I am not in my country.
Y tratar de entender la cultura americana.
Try to understand the American culture.
E integrarla a mi cultura, porque la cultura la traigo yo en mis venas, en mi forma de ser.
And to assimilate it within my culture, because my culture, I have it in my, it's who I am, it's part of what, who I am, so.
Okay, if given the chance, would you want to be a citizen of the United States?
Si le dieran la oportunidad, ¿usted quisiera ser un ciudadano americano?
Por supuesto, porque de esa manera tendría más acceso a todos los servicios y derechos que tiene cualquier persona americana.
Yes, of course, because at that point I would have access to the same rights as anybody else who is American.
Y de esa manera también contribuir a lo que es una sociedad, ir adelante.
And that, as well as contributing to what it is a society and to move forward.
Best question to ask this. What do you do for a living? What's your job?
¿Qué tipo de trabajo tiene? ¿Qué hace para sostenerse?
Mi trabajo es en una compañía que se dedica a la manufacturización.
He works for a manufacturing company.
De productos plásticos.
Plastic products.
Y mi posición es la de mixer.
And I'm a mixer.
Okay.
That's my position. That's what I do.
Thank you.
Gracias. Gracias.
De nada, usted.
Jeremy McKinney, an immigration lawyer, also attended today's rally. He had some very strong ideas about realistic immigration reform.
I'm speaking with Jeremy McKinney, who is an immigration rights attorney here in Greensboro. Jeremy, tell me what you're thinking about all of this right now.
I think it's great. I think everyone here has been tremendously positive in terms of the rally today. The organizers really haven't taken too big of a position on boycott versus no boycott. I just think they really wanted a strong showing of public support and speaking with one unified voice for comprehensive immigration reform.
What does comprehensive immigration reform look like to you?
Well, it looks great to me. What it means is really two things. Number one, and this is what is getting the most press and the most publicity, is doing something to address the needs of the 11 to 12 million estimated undocumented individuals in the United States. That really is only part of the problem. Really, the 86 amnesty was very similar in that it granted people, you know, some kind of temporary residency if you were here undocumented. That alone is not going to solve the problem. What this proposal does is also create a new guest worker program that would provide for the secure and orderly ingress and egress of workers in and out of the United States. So what it does is solves the problem.
Okay.
Right now, if you have a college degree, there's probably a visa for you.
Really?
Yes, it's called an H-1B, and it's probably there. If you're at the bottom, meaning if you're an agriculture worker, there's probably a visa for you. If you're in between, if you're a skilled worker but you don't have a college degree, realistically, there's not a visa for you. And until you change that system, there's going to continue being illegal labor.
I just talked to or interviewed a gentleman named Oludeda, who is working in a manufacturing company locally as a mixer doing plastics. He falls right into that category. So the chances of him getting a visa or even perhaps eventually citizenship are very slim right now.
Completely non-existent right now. And I'll tell you what, if that individual is undocumented right now, it's even worse. The crazy way in which Congress has constructed the law, what it means, if he gets deported, he can't come back for 10 years. Well, let's say an employer wanted to sponsor him right now and he went home to get a visa. Well, if he went home and tried to do the right thing, under our law, he couldn't come back for 10 years. So what is the logical result? The logical result is that workers like that stay here and stay illegal. And nothing is going to change until you create a visa that allows for the orderly ingress and egress of workers like that.
Are there any, being an attorney, you would know the answer to this question. It's something I've always wondered. Is there any law that prohibits these folks from organizing, such as in unions?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
So even if they were here as undocumented workers, they could still organize?
They could still organize, but let's face the facts. With the current state of the system, I think the fear factor, for lack of a better term, would outweigh any chance of any meaningful unionization attempt. Now, if you go back over history in the past, half a century or so, there was really only one meaningful unionization of undocumented employees, and that was agricultural workers in California during the 60s and 70s. Exactly. That's really been the only meaningful unionization that has occurred.
Really?
Especially in North Carolina, we're at what's called an at-will state, a right-to-work state. Unionization is just not really something realistic.
Right. So what do you, if you were to see this as having a positive outcome, what do you think the positive outcome would be in this situation?
Oh, the positive outcome is very simple, and that is a comprehensive, a complete overhaul of the current immigration laws that not only addresses the needs of many of these folks that are here today, but also fundamentally changes the visa system to allow skilled workers to go backwards and to go back and forth. Not everybody wants to stay here, but you've got to give employers the workers they need, or the law of supply and demand is always going to beat out our regulatory immigration laws.
Right, right. How doable is that?
It's completely doable. Right now,
even in today's current political climate?
Absolutely, because in the Senate right now, you've got conservatives like the majority leader, Bill Frist. You've got moderates like John McCain. You have liberals like Edward Kennedy. They all agree on this issue. They're all on the same page, and they put together a compromise. Once we get a bill through the Senate, there are enough people of good intent and of goodwill in the House that if we can get a vote, it'll go through. President Bush has already indicated he'll sign it. So we've got the president. We have the will of the Senate. We just need the will of the House.
The House of Representatives, which now has H.R. 4437 in effect, which basically says that they will be felons and sent back to their home countries.
I never took that bill seriously. I've got to be honest with you. The way that I always saw it, H.R. 4437 was just cover for these representatives. It's like when you go to a used car dealership and if you want to buy a car for $10,000, you don't walk in and say that. You might walk in and say $5,000 first. So the way I see H.R. 4437 is the House saying, we're going to be really tough. We're going to put forth this awful, draconian bill, and we're going to send it out as a Christmas present to the undocumented population everywhere. But I think at the end of the day, they're going to be willing to compromise, because otherwise they're do-nothing Congress. This Congress has had a record of 2 years of not really accomplishing much. This is at the forefront. Are they going to support their president on this, or are they going to turn him away, make him a lame duck 2 years early?
He may have done that himself.
Arguably.
Just real briefly before everything gets started up here, what situations have you run into? What's the toughest kind of situation you've had to defend as being an attorney in this area?
The toughest thing I have to defend is, and I have to do it over and over again, it's when someone gets into a car accident or has some kind of brush with the police. They haven't been in trouble. They've been completely law-abiding. They've been in this country for more than 10 years. They have families. They have work. They have connections here. And yet, there's no solution for them under the law. And you've got to try to figure out some way for them to be able to stay here legally. It's the biggest challenge that I face every day.
How successful are you? I mean, I don't want to ask you how successful are you personally, but how successful are you with being able to do that?
It's a hard, incredibly hard burden to face. Currently, if a person can prove they've been here for 10 years and they have a U.S. citizen or permanent resident parent, spouse, or child, they have an opportunity to ask a judge to let them stay, but the standard is exceptional and extremely unusual hardship to that relative. That's an incredibly high burden to face, and it's something that only literally dozens of people can do each year.
Wow.
And all of the country.
Dozens around the
dozens.
Country.
We're talking about very low numbers. Congress Congress allows 4,000 a year to get their papers this way, but it's used so seldom, so very seldom, that I would estimate it would be less than 100 a year nationwide.
That's amazing.
It's a very hard burden to meet.
Jeremy, thank you.
All right. No problem.
Does this ring true to immigrants who don't have the luxury of even going to college? Blanche, an undocumented immigrant from Guatemala who is also a high school senior, spoke to me and expressed her misgivings about the glass ceiling for students who are not U.S. citizens.
Okay, I'm speaking with Blanche, and Blanche is here in the United States. And Blanche, tell me, what do you do here? What's your, are you at school now? Or?
Yeah, this is my senior year in high school.
Senior year in high school. What's your experience with being in the country and being undocumented?
It's really hard. You get a lot of racist comments. This year has been, I think, the toughest year for me. I've shed plenty of tears for all the racial comments that go on, the racial looks you get. I mean, it's really hard.
What kind of comments have you heard?
Well, just, I broke my hand. I play soccer. And one of the girls on the other team said, oh, look at that stupid Mexican. She can speak English. And just comments like that, just, you know, it hurts a lot. I'm not Mexican. Not everyone in this world is a Mexican, but it just shows how ignorant people can really be. And they don't, if they could be in our shoes, maybe they'd understand, but they don't.
Well, tell me about what it means to be in your shoes. What does that feel like?
Well, I mean, it's hard. It's a lot of stress, you know. It just, thinking about what I'm going to do in my future, I know that I can't go to college unless, you know, I get my papers. And then, you know, I'm a good student. I have A's and B's in class. And, you know, I expect higher things for myself. I want to be an orthodontist one day, and I have to go to school for that.
Note to a listener, she has the whitest teeth I've ever seen. Okay, so tell me again, I guess, what country are you from?
I'm from Guatemala.
From Guatemala. If given the opportunity, would you become a citizen?
Yeah, in a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat. What's your aspirations? What college do you want to go to?
Well, I wanted to go to Carolina.
You want to go to Carolina?
Yeah, that's where I want to go.
You also have a southern accent, too, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Well, I used to live in New York.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I came to the United States when I was one, and I've been here ever since.
Realistic immigration reform may get a new priority level as a result of these rallies. Reporting from the City County Plaza in Greensboro, North Carolina, for the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
You know, if Bruce isn't careful, he's going to wind up being a journalist. That was a damn fine report, and all of, front cover to cover, it was wonderful. But the young lady there at the end is the one who moved me. Rock solid student, speaks perfect English, came here when she was one. Had she been born here, there would be nothing said. But she has to wonder about her future because she came here when she was one. What might that young woman do if we don't gave her a reasonable opportunity to continue her education? What might she do? Meanwhile, at Yale, if you'll recall, the guy who was the spokesman for the Taliban and very proud about blowing up 1,500-year-old statues of the Buddha carved into a mountainside in Bamiyan, that guy who barely has he doesn't even have a high school education. He doesn't have a high school equivalency. This guy participated, was complicit and approving of stoning women to death for taking off that giant, ugly-ass beekeeper's suit. That dude is in Yale on a free ride. Dig it? But because she wasn't born here, she just happened to come here when she was one. Well, she can't go to college. Maybe she can, maybe Blanche can, serve meals for a nice white family in Charlotte or Greensboro. Maybe she can scrub toilets. Because for a freak like Tom Tancredo, thinks that she's not quite American enough. Dig it. Chew on it. And my brothers and sisters out there who, you know, as liberals, we got to do something about this illegal immigration. I mean, I'm liberal and everything, but, you know, they're going to overrun us. They're already here. And they're not doing you any harm. Agnes, do you have Vernon Robinson's new political ad there? If you do, it would be a great thing to run about right now. Our good friend CB sent it to you. Well, we're going to take our bottom of the hour break now. Blanche. This is Blanche's America. And what is America trying to do to her? See, the immigration attorney didn't have a full understanding of what's going down. No, this wasn't thrown out there, that hateful Republican bill that Tom Tancredo loves so much in the House of Representatives. It wasn't thrown out there as a decoy? These damn Republicans really feel that way. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hi, I'm Linda Ellerby. Did you know that every 3 minutes another woman gets the news she has breast cancer? I got it 11 years ago, and I know how scary it can be. Everything your doctor says sounds like a foreign language. HER2-new, oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Please listen. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the Internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. The first place to go the minute you find you have breast cancer. Breastcancer.org.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Can you imagine a world without children? A world without their smiles or their laughter? A world where children don't play or sing, or dream, or imagine.
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we can't imagine a world without children. That's why we're working every day. to find cures for diseases that strike down children everywhere. Diseases like cancer, pediatric AIDS, and sickle cell. And we won't stop until every child is cured and every disease is defeated. Because we can't imagine a world without children. Can you?
Finding cures, saving children. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. To learn how you can help, call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to our website, stjude.org.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss and tell.
WithEstateRadio.com.
She had to go like 3 miles out of her way because Bush was there visiting. And he had his whole entourage and Secret Service, and they were blocking off the road, the highway that she has to take to get to work.
The Bush got you down? Let Grace and Rama Homebodies get you up every Sunday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern right here on the Head On Radio Network and homebodies.ramabahama.net. We'll trim the mess for you.
Back with Head On. Bob's away for the moment, but he'll be back. We're talking about immigration. You know, one of the things that kind of astounds me about what's going on is that you could say somebody doesn't belong here just because they cross a parcel of land. I don't think anyone has a claim to being here other than the Indians, as far as being naturally born natives. But instead of focusing on what matters and what's going on, we're focusing on something totally different. It's kind of an ADD nation. We're not paying any attention. The political scams that are going on is amazing. And they figure if they can take your attention away from what's going on, then they've got it made. But I'm going to turn it back over to my husband. Are you there, honey?
Good evening, darling.
Hi, sweetheart.
Sorry about that. I had to reboot the whole cotton-picking computer. These things happen. Oh, I guess she's gone already. Did you find the Vernon Robinson clip?
Not yet, dear.
Okay. Well, let's move on to a little something else. First of all, because I was just gonna, is there anyone online? Okay. I do want to move on to something else because our good friend Brandon from the headonradio.com message boards and email sent me a note saying that this may be the breaking point for him because, you know, he had supported Bush. And what he was talking about was this story coming out from ABC News saying that Bush administration repeatedly, deliberately didn't get rid of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. And that they didn't do it because it would have been politically inconvenient to have him out of the way. They needed a bugbear. And the funny thing is, this was reported a year and a half ago. I remember reading about it. That they had a shot at him, and the administration said, "Don't take him out, because if we do that, they'll think that there's no good cause for the war." This is how they operate. I'm glad the lights are going on for some people. These are monsters. And by the way, did you get a good look at the Zarqawi video with him running around and shooting a gun? Did you get that? Running and shooting an AK-47 or some such. Maybe it was an Uzi. I don't know. Running and shooting an Uzi. There's only one problem with that. I mean, this is straight out of The Fugitive, okay? Abu Musab al-Zarqawi only has one leg. And this wasn't one of those lightweight titanium prosthetic numbers he was running around on either. He's the one-legged man. And this guy's out running around. Did you see the picture in the link that Brandon sent to me from ABC News? If you go, abcnews.com or whatever. Go and look. This guy looks like somebody out of Central Casting. This guy is... He's chunky. He's not a guy who's been living from minute to minute in closets and basements and garages and running on constantly on the run, hiding from the American... How damn dumb do they think we are? Let's go to the phones. Jim is with us. Hey, Jim, you're head on. Good to talk to you.
Hello?
Hey, how are you?
Fine. I see you have your direct service link in place.
Yes, I do.
Good. I hear you fine by fine.
Wonderful.
Just a few things I would like to add, if I may, please.
Yes, please.
In reference to the comment made about by one of the listeners to the album that shows Rumsfeld as Pharaoh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's still good to know that we live in a country where we can still do that.
Yes.
And, you know, there are other places in the world where that would not even be permitted. I'm still thankful we can do that.
And well, the thing is, though, Jim, there is evidence that we are losing that kind of a right. Because I've got a story here in front of me from the Cleveland Plain Dealer.
Mm-hmm.
A band went on stage at the Tri-C Jazz Fest in Cleveland. At a little, nothing little, it's a beautiful facility called Tower City in downtown Cleveland, and they were wearing anti-Bush t-shirts. They were driven off the stage by festival management. They were told to pull the plug on the band. The general manager of Tower City said, "We felt the band's attire was distracting and inappropriate." So, yeah, it's good to live in a country where you can do that. But the question is how much longer we'll be able to.
Well, my only reply to that is what Chairman Mao once said, let 100 school flowers bloom, let 100 schools of thought contend. Anyway, there is a book that I would like to mention that people might be interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's by Jonathan Alter, who's senior correspondent for Newsweek. And it's entitled The Defining Moment, FDR's 100 Days and the Triumph of Hope. And it's a very good read. And
sounds fascinating. You say Jonathan Alter did this?
Right. He's a Newsweek senior correspondent.
Yeah, he's a very good writer.
Exactly. And, you know, Roosevelt had a number of opportunities to have become a dictator. And he didn't. And
yeah, elected not to.
Right. And it basically, even though his efforts to combat the Depression were not really solved until we got into the war. That's what really pulled us out of the Great Depression of the 30s.
That's right.
With World War II. And basically that was it. But even though such, it did give the people of this country some hope. And after his first fireside chat, people began not to fear putting their money back into banks and things like that.
Did you come away with a sort of a feeling of, oh my God, how far have we sunken? When you consider leadership like that versus leadership like what we're stuck with now.
Well, I think you know the answer to that question. Yeah. Absolutely. I agree with the current policies of the current regime. I think that unfortunately, we have come a long, 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 long way.
Well, and that's the sad thing. This is 2006. We're stuck with this guy till January 20th, 2009. And there's still a whole lot more damage this guy can do.
And, you know, there's something else that sort of gives me cause for concern, and that's, you know, about the national anthem. Now, if I were living in France, I would not expect them to play the Marseillaise in English. If I were in that country, mm-hmm. I would be obligated to, you know, at least make an effort to be conversant in their native tongue. And I don't know, I still have this propensity to think that English should be the lingua franca of this country.
Well, and I think if you heard the report there from Bruce, and you heard young Blanche there at the end of it, I think it's quite clear that it still is. You know, she came to this country when she was 1 year old. She speaks perfect English. She is a Guatemalan. She is a so-called illegal. But she's been in the school system. She speaks English. And it's, Jim, isn't it the same thing that you get with almost any influx of immigrants? You know, the first generation Italians. You know, grandma and grandpa probably spoke Italian. But their kids learned English.
Yeah.
Doesn't that make sense?
Well, but, you know, it does, but I think in certain respects, and as far as the current immigration thing is concerned, I think they've had ample opportunities to learn English. I don't know.
And they do in large part. Their children learn it, just like every immigrant generation. There's an anchor on CNN. Her name is Betty Nguyen, Nguyen. I think that's like the Vietnamese version of Smith. And I'm sure, you know, her parents, her grandparents, maybe they didn't speak English. She does, and she does it well enough to be a talking head on CNN.
Well, good.
You know, I don't think the English language is in any damage or in any danger. I think that a lot of this is ginned up hysteria. And I haven't entirely figured out what it's for yet. Unless it's quite possibly the one issue that might most easily divide the liberal community.
Could be. Well, I said several weeks ago that it was a red herring.
Mm-hmm. And it is, except for the fact, the one thing that disturbs me is that I really do believe that these hateful Republicans like Tom Tancredo really, really would like to do something evil and wicked to these people. Because, you know, Tom Tancredo is just an ugly little racist.
Yeah, he is. And as far as the national anthem is concerned, I've heard it sung by or recordings of Marian Anderson, and I've also heard Roseanne sing it one time. That was pretty interesting.
And heard the version played, the instrumental version played by Jimi Hendrix at Woodstock.
And I've also heard it sung by Jesse Norman,
mm-hmm.
which I sort of prefer, actually. And but like I say, that's just my own personal thing. I happen to value language greatly.
As I think you know, I do. I'm an absolute. I have my little occasional journalism freakouts. because I think, you know, if you're in the language business, you should at least make a passing fair attempt to use it correctly.
Indeed. And, but anyway, that was just a thought that passed through my mind. But the book by Jonathan Alter is quite good, and it does point out the amazing ability of FDR to really save this country.
Indeed. Well, Jim, thank you very much.
Have a good evening.
You too, sir. Bye now. All right, just a few minutes left, and just because some things are worth keeping up with, I do want you to know what the right wing megaphone has to say about the so-called bust of America's number one junkie right wing talker. Headline from Newsmax, because you know, I go over there and I want to see what the evil people are up to. Rush Limbaugh arrest reports were bogus. Yep, that's the headline at Newsmax. He wasn't arrested. Go look at the blotter, the online blotter. It clearly says arresting agency. Yeah, he's a junkie. He broke the law. He's not even going to be prosecuted for it. But he was arrested. You know, right? But the right wing lies. Let's go to the phones. Bernie is with us. Hey, Bernie, you're head on. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Bob. You're a little stale. I'm on now, huh? Okay. Sure. I just called, and I want to ask a question.
Okay.
Why are we not screaming at the top of our as loud as we can scream? Why are we not marching on? Why are we permitting this to continue, this madness, this evident, self-evident? It is so obvious that these people need to be stopped, not tomorrow, not next week, but now.
Yeah, right now. I can't answer that question, Bernie, because if it was up to me, I mean, the tens of thousands, the hundreds of thousands of people who are in the streets today, God bless them. I wish they could understand, and I'm not trying to talk down to anybody, but I wish they understood that their problem is George Bush. They don't have to convince America. They have to stop Bush. They stop Bush, we can work on their problem.
Yeah, I told somebody today, you know what? I'd rather hang out with a bunch of people from Mexico than any white man I know, or a lot of white people I know, or whatever you want to call them. I don't know if that's a prejudice. I didn't mean that to be prejudiced, except for against people that the whitey tighties, I call them.
Exactly. I share your sense on that, because they're you know, Bush voters. You know,
yeah.
I can't talk to them. I can't understand them. And I would far rather hang out with somebody who knows what it is to work and knows what it is after that. To enjoy what little leisure time you have, and conversation and common cause. Absolutely, you're right, Bernie.
You know, I had one of the greatest nights I've had in a while on Friday night. I went over to a friend's house, and she and I played guitar for about 3 hours together.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Oh, yeah, it was great fun, especially when you're not very good like I am, and you actually see that, hey, I'm starting to be able to do something.
that is neat. I'm a very poor guitar player myself, and it's always fun to sit down and try to learn a little bit, grow a little bit with the instrument, hey, look, I can play that chord now.
Yeah, it's just such a wonderful thing. But there's a link, and I'm not sure. I think I'll email it to you. There was a speech, a Crossfire, 1980 something. Where John Lofton and that horrible man Novak, and then
yes.
a left-wing guy, and I forgot his name, but Frank Zappa was being interviewed for the 7 words that you can't say. They were talking about obscenity. And anyhow, he put it very concisely when he was talking about Reagan. He said, you are looking at the start of a theocratic fascist theocracy. Do you understand what I mean?
Oh, yes. I absolutely do.
And that was in the 80s. Guess what?
He was right.
He was right on the money.
There are some people out there, Bernie, that I so very badly wish weren't gone. I watch all this stuff going on with the Bush administration, and I could just kick Hunter S. Thompson for bailing out.
Yeah.
We need him. We needed Frank Zappa to go to the doctor and get the disgusting little test, and you know, deal with it and not die of prostate cancer.
I know.
We need that.
Tragic. I'm a very, very big Frank Zappa fan. I spent, and this is off the topic, but I spent like 3 hours. This is how good I am on guitar. I slowed a song of his down to 20%, and in 3 hours I learned 24 seconds of the song.
See, I've done similar things with Santana tunes.
Oh, you're a Santana fan. Yeah, he's a marvelous musician too.
There's a lick from a song called Europa. It's an instrumental.
Yeah, I can play the beginning of it.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah, and it took me about 6 days to learn the first 9 notes, you know.
I know, isn't that something?
and it amazes me that there are people, that there are people out there, who just hear things and play them. I know some of these people. They're amazing. And I'm being reminded, Bernie, by our good friend Bruce Birch, who is quite possibly the world's biggest Frank Zappa fan, that you will enjoy yourself listening to his program, because he uses nothing but Frank Zappa bumper music.
I don't know that name.
Bruce is the host of All Things Reconsidered on Sunday night at 10 o'clock here on the Head On Radio Network.
Oh, okay. On the one I'm listening
on this,
to now.
Yeah, on this stream.
Okay. I will listen.
So you'll.
For a second.
I think you'll enjoy it. Bernie, I hope we'll hear from you again soon. Good talking to you.
You too, Bob. You take care, huh?
All right, will do. Have a great evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. I'm very pleased with the way the evening has worked out for the most part. And I can't wait until tomorrow night. Get back into the groove of things. And a reminder, of course, again, May 4th, Thursday, noon to 3, separate show. Because we oughta. And I'll be in on it remotely. Bruce Birch will be live at the Raleigh County Armory, joined by our very good friend, Dr. Bill O'Brien. I can't wait for this. It's going to be so much fun. I hope you'll join us for it. The show tonight, of course, was produced by my lovely, darling wife of 13 years precisely today, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor. Randy Kerbway is our engineer. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computers makes all the computer miracles happen, and we would be lost without him. And, of course, the show is brought to you tonight and every night by the thousands of members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They get up every day, they go out, rain or shine, hot weather, cold weather, whatever, and they build the American dream. And in so doing, they support this program. And we're trying to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.